Steve, thanks. Hi, everyone. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. We're thrilled that you're listening and hope that you'll call in at some point, 312-981-7200. On yesterday's show, it was established that you were in a great deal of pain. You had a lot of back pain going on yesterday. Are you doing better today?
I got it about a week back.
About a week back. This is where a rim. This is why we need a rim shot.
We have one.
That's
somewhere.
Our Christmas wish is a rim shot.
Please, Santa Claus.
Please, Santa Claus. We've been good for part of the year. Give us a rim shot. You feel a little better today?
Yes, I do. I need to take the muscle relaxers, though.
Now, you know that affected your behavior yesterday
no,
a little
it didn't.
Bit. You
yeah,
didn't think
we,
so?
We need for you to take those relaxers.
What happened?
Please.
You seemed, as a muscle relaxer would do, you seemed more relaxed.
Maybe I should take it every day.
Maybe. I'd chip in. Steve, are you in on this?
Absolutely.
All right,
it's
whatever
like
it costs.
The old King and Queens King of Queens episode where Carrie was more pleasurable when she was drunk.
I remember that.
Arthur Spooner and Doug would bring in the drink cart as she came home every day from work and make new cocktails.
If that's what it takes for the good of the show, I think we would all pitch in. I think
I'll
everybody would pitch in.
No, it just relaxed my muscles, oddly enough. So I felt less, I have a lot of pressure and tension, in my shoulders.
Yeah.
And it was very relaxed.
Why don't we get a masseuse to just stand behind you and constantly rub your neck and shoulders throughout the show? That can't
be expensive.
Do
you want me moaning and groaning during every segment?
I don't think it would be dramatically different from the fare we usually provide, but whatever it takes. But you're feeling okay. Now, you're still wearing the strange-shaped object that I've never seen before in my life until
it's
yesterday.
It's a bed buddy. Tell them about the bed buddy,
Steve.
The
bed buddy. You're still wearing the bed buddy.
It could be yours if the price is right. It's just a thing you heat up or you could freeze, and it's good for musculoskeletal issues.
Mm-hmm.
I learned that in biology class.
And the doctor told you to expect this to be totally gone in 3 days, right?
Well, not totally gone. He said I'll be feeling much
better. A little better.
And then stop taking the muscle relaxers.
And will you?
I don't know.
We'll see. We'll find out. That remains to be seen.
But I'm feeling better. We don't have to focus on it. I just am a little slow.
All right. That's fine. Maybe that's better for everybody. Maybe sometimes the show is too fast-paced. I think this is better. I think this is a much better thing. Did you get to hear or see any of Mayor Emanuel's speech just a little while ago?
I listened to it all on the way in, and I like to think he's got it figured out. We need education. We need it's not going to happen overnight. We need to nurture these kids from the time that they're elementary school to adulthood. It's a very important time.
Right.
And, you know, the police need to have relationships with the public. And it all sounds really good. All these things sound very good in theory. It's just to make it happen, it has to happen.
That's what I was thinking. He said and did all the right things, and it was extremely emotional.
Yeah, and I believe him. Don't you believe he's saying that from his heart? I really do.
I believe the intention is genuine, but as you pointed out, and I understand how politics works. The game of politics is played by telling people kind of what they want to hear, but then the real game is, what do you do next? You could talk a good game all day long. The problem is with every politician is putting it into action. So what do you do? That was a fairly good speech. That was a very emotional, good speech where all the right buttons were pushed. But what happens now? What does he do to make those things happen? And I say he, and realistically,
it's not all up to
one guy's job. It was very noble to start the speech out by saying, the blame starts with me. That was an extremely noble position to take. But the next step is, what does he and everybody involved in this process have to do to make this happen?
Well, it really hit home when he said nurturing the children, because I know there are some families that don't nurture. I might over-nurture.
Yeah.
And something I heard Rahm Emanuel say, it's like we need to be there to prevent little childhood mishaps into adult problems.
Right.
And, you know, sometimes I overreact when there are childhood mishaps. And in the grand scheme of things, the mishaps going on from my children are really nothing.
But,
you know?
I think that is what's in the least of the mayor's control. What is in his control more so is the behavior of the police department.
Absolutely.
And I think he said some very strong things there, you know, where he said I played the cut in the 10 o'clock news. Basically, you can't expect a kid to respect you if you don't start by respecting him as well.
Goes two ways.
That's a bold thing to say to a police officer.
It is, isn't it?
And also, he was very direct in saying, look, we cannot cover up for fellow officers. If it's a little thing, it becomes sort of an atmosphere, a society of it, and then it becomes bigger things. And then we become to where we are with Laquan McDonald. So, you know, I think that's going to be the message of it, that he's putting the police department on notice as they search for a new superintendent, that things have got to change there.
Steve, what you just said, it resonates with Kevin and I were listening to the speech in the office, and we were trying to determine, and I don't know if anybody has really figured this part of it out yet. I don't know. How involved, let's say, because it sure looks like there was a cover-up of some sort, doesn't there?
A lengthy one, too,
lengthy
I might
one,
add.
Right? All right, so it sure looks like at some point there was some sort of a cover-up. You can look at the Burger King tape. There's several reasons that would show you that somebody knew something and it wasn't being shared with the rest of the public.
Well, the filed police report is clearly contrary
it is.
To the video.
It absolutely is. So the question that I had at the time, and I'll throw it out there to you, is, was Mayor Daley, was Mayor Emanuel, Mayor Daley,
we had
a long time in my life there was a guy here named Mayor Daley.
We've been kicking that guy since he left. Let's
right.
not stop now.
All right. Was Mayor Emanuel privy to any of this? Was there ever a moment where somebody came to him and said, hey, here's a situation, or two situations now, here's two situations that could really explode and blow up, and especially in the midst of his possible election there? So was there ever a point where he was in on any
he
kind of a
cover-up? He had to know. He's the mayor.
Well,
come on.
Wait. At what point, though? I mean, he clearly knew there was this explosive videotape. He said he hadn't seen it, but, I mean, he was certainly aware of
right.
it. But I'm sure he was not aware of, you know, the initial filing of a police report. I mean, I don't think, you know.
You don't think he was?
No, I don't think they went and said, hey, we got a dirty shooting here. The fellow coppers are going to change the story.
Isn't that little part of the story all of itself, isn't that a huge, huge part of the story when you stop and think about
and
it?
And don't you go to the mayor when there's something like this? It's happening in the
Really? You don't?
I mean, do you go to Peter Liguori when there's something wrong at Tribune Media?
I don't know him.
Okay. How many guys on the force do you think know Mayor Emanuel to go up and talk to him?
But if there was something as big, I know it's a theoretical question, but if it was something big as somebody losing their life in a very, very peculiar way, I would go to a superior. I wouldn't go to the head of Tribune Entertainment, but I would go to somebody higher up and go, what do we do now?
Right. And so maybe they did, and that's what they're looking at. And, you know, it's clear now that there is a federal investigation, and there has been, into the way the police department responded to this shooting. I mean, there's been a grand jury. They've heard from witnesses. So they presumably are looking at that.
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting, too, to hear Anita Alvarez on with Ro Khan and Anna DeVlantes. And she was saying, it was just an ongoing investigation that took that long. And we want to make sure before that, to me, I couldn't take that and believe that.
It does seem to have a hole or two, doesn't it?
It does. And I could be wrong. But it just seems like it was...
especially with a video, with video evidence, even though it wasn't shared with the general public until just a few weeks ago, they had access to it.
And isn't it sort of Mayor Emanuel's job to watch that video, to know what we're dealing with here for the city as a whole?
I think so, but I've heard the argument go the other way, and it's a convincing argument somehow, but I think so. I do. Don't you?
If I gave a video to Peter Liguori, he would watch it. Depends what video
Depends
it was.
Depends on what the video
but
was.
But really, if there was something so heinous.
Maybe put it on the CW?
As a weekly show?
I hope
maybe.
It gets ratings.
Maybe. All right. There's a lot of people who have some opinions on this, and we welcome them. 312-981-7200. We're going to get to your calls and texts in just a little bit. Stay where you are. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. That sale's crazy, Wendy. Mystery and crime in daytime. Watch Crime Watch Daily weekday afternoons at 3. Right before WGN-TV Evening News, then that's at 4. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder. We welcome your phone calls, 312-981-7200, or your texts at that same number. We're talking about the Mayor Emanuel's press conference about a half an hour ago. Very, very emotional. What are your thoughts?
Karen, why don't you jump in first here?
Well, thank you. And I'm not the most articulate individual, but I will try.
Join the club.
To be as succinct in my comments as possible. Actually, I am very I'm very moved by his speech. I'm almost going to cry. I am an emotional individual. I'm a passionate individual. My job is extremely stressful, all about customer service. And in that, I am as critical as anyone. However, not in a negative sense, but one who, because of my work, because of my background, I try to always work the problem, people, work the problem. Always strive for excellence to arrive at good. And that was something a former employer told us. Always strive for excellence to arrive at good. And with that, I say I applaud the mayor. I am outside Chicago, but born and raised in the very far south side, Beverly West. I am very honored and hold Chicago close in my heart. I'm now in the suburbs. And this mayor, yes, does he have it all figured out? Absolutely, positively, no, he does not have it figured out. His speech this morning was about he doesn't have it figured out. But this is his values, this is his goals, this is how he sees we need to proceed, and this is what I am doing to put in place to try to make this happen. By coming on the air today, ahead of this report by whoever's investigating the police department, he's eating crow. He's being proactive and saying and actively saying, okay, there are issues, we're being investigated, and ahead of sitting by and waiting for a report to come back, he's being proactive. Yes, he's following the political course. He has to demonstrate leadership. But he is, and he's just saying it. And what was the bottom line tone of one of many, I believe, but one very strong tone? Respect. Respect. And that is so important in every single darn thing we do. Be respectful of your dog, your cat, your home, your neighbors, everyone, the customers you serve. Which brings me to, we, the public, are the customers. The police department, the mayor, we are their customers. They are answerable to us. So, yes, be critical of our mayor, of our public servants, but do it in a positive, respectful manner. We need to stay the course. We do not now start need to barking about, oh, he's full of it, and oh, he doesn't know anything, and he's driven by keeping his job. No, demonstrate respect. Show respect of your leadership. Be faithful to his energy, even if it is a big piece of farce. Be faithful to his energy, because what's wrong with respect? Can any of us deny that that's not the proper course of action for any one of us to follow? We need to demonstrate a sense of community, respect your leader, show him your support, believe, and march accordingly. If you object, yes, do object, but do it in a respectful manner. And that brings me back to, or then to my next point. If you object, if you disagree, that's what we do. Be positively critical. Stay vigilant. Stay public in your objection, but do it in a respectful manner. Not to combat him, but to contribute and help guide him. Be the customers. Give positive feedback back to your provider. Back to the person who you are paying services for. Give positive feedback and say, this isn't working. We would recommend this. But also in the same manner, applaud and give positive reinforcement. Positive reinforcement, oh my gosh, is the best motivator ever.
Karen, I think you're pretty darned articulate, yeah. If you want to know the truth.
WGN, thank you, WGN. And one last comment, if I may, and yeah. I really appreciate your time.
Sure.
Please, WGN, open up your call line more. We can't text. I listen to you on the road, which I think many people do. There's your audience. We're in the car. I can't text. Please open up your telephone line for this dialogue. Especially during this very difficult time that our city is in the process of, open up commentary, positive commentary. The worst thing we now can do is to become complacent, to say, oh, well, yeah, forget about this. No, we need to stay strong. We need to stay public. We need to
stay the course. Karen, with all due respect, and we respect your call, we have to take a break for news. But
absolutely.
We appreciate your comments.
I may vote for Karen.
I know.
I don't know if she's running for anything, but I may vote for her.
I had time. I just did.
You just voted.
Oh, my God. That was awesome. And, we have other sides of the argument, other side of the argument. We have a show to do, and we can discuss this all day long. We have a second half of the show, too.
Absolutely.
And really, there are people that are worked up and people saying rude things about that last caller, and it's like, respect is the bottom line. If you don't agree with someone, you don't have to be a jerk about it.
R-E-S-P-C-T-E. I can't spell well. I know I spelled that incorrectly, but whatever Aretha Franklin was trying
to
say.
You did it right.
R-E-S-P-E-C-T?
Yeah, respect.
I think
just
I inverted
a little bit.
Just a little bit. All right, let's do this. We'll take a break. We've got news. Steve has the news for you. And then our pal Tony Fulmer stops by to talk about winter plants and a whole lot more. We're thrilled you're here. It's Bill Leffler and it's Wendy Snyder on WGN.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is not the President of the United States, but we are going to hail to the Chief Horticultural Officer for Chalet Nursery. Chalet is located in beautiful Wilmette, 3132 Lake Avenue. And Tony Fulmer, welcome once again to the show.
As always, it's my pleasure.
How are you, Tony? Everything good?
Good. Excellent. Just on the downside of a cold summer.
Oh, no.
No, it'll be good.
You'll be all right? All right.
Planting is not just for summer.
That's right.
We have to get things ready for winter for outside things.
Right.
Bulbs. I have purchased bulbs. Listeners have sent me bulbs. I think you brought us bulbs last time you were here.
Those
the tulip
easy bloom pads.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I have not planted the bulbs yet. Am I too late?
Ordinarily, Wendy, you would be too late. Ordinarily, there would be at least 3 to 4 inches of frost in the ground. But right now, with these temperatures, there's no frost in the ground, so it's going to be muddy. And my understanding is there's going to be lots and lots of moisture this weekend. So the next few days, you can absolutely go ahead and get your bulbs in ASAP.
How about that?
Is it possible, Tony, I know you're a busy man, to come in and give our listeners a moisture alert a couple times a week? Would you come in like on Thursdays?
Could I phone that in?
If you, we do. Wendy and I phone it in.
Every day.
Yep. We can all phone it in.
Sure, I can phone that in. And temperatures, soil temperatures too. Sure. Absolutely.
So that will be good then to get them in now, because then when the moisture happens, that's what the bulbs need to.
Yeah, that'll trigger the rooting mechanism. But what you really need to do planting this late, you know, a lot of people plant bulbs and then they water them and then they're finished. Planting them this late, what you want to do is you want to cover them with 1 to 3 inches of some type of mulching material like leaf mulch, because you need to keep those soil temperatures up. If you put the bulbs in late like this, the temperatures drop and that ground starts freezing, they don't get rooted properly, and then they won't bloom uniformly and they may not even bloom at all. It may affect the bloom. So you want to get them in and mulch them with 1 to 3 inches.
I'll put little blankets on them.
That's exactly. That's the best thing you can do
little,
them, right?
Little booties. Little
blankets. Yeah. I'm sorry?
Little what?
Booties.
Oh, booties. Oh, I thought he
booties
said something else.
I thought he did too.
No.
We're
going to
review the tape, Tony.
No.
You may have to sit in the penalty box for a few minutes.
Okay.
Did
right.
you see the lovely poinsettia, which I know it's poinsettia, but I've never said poinsettia in my life.
And I don't either.
It's poinsettia.
It's poinsettia.
Legally, poinsettia.
Legally, it's poinsettia.
Yeah.
But it's just that extra syllable in there. The poinsettia is just, you get lazy. It takes too long.
Yep.
Exactly.
So that is a lovely poinsettia plant. And
it's a little different, isn't it?
It is different. It looks like all I'm seeing are the, is it variegated? Is that what it's
variegated?
Called?
Mm-hmm.
That's the two colors of the leaf.
Mm-hmm.
And
as she instructs Bill. Yes.
It looks like the leaves are... they're all kind of blended in. It's really beautiful.
It's a newer variety. It's called Tapestry, and it's a shame people can't see it right now, but it's green, and then it has that gold green edge, and which may sound a little Las Vegas-y, but I actually think that bright red against those colors is really nice.
It looks like Christmas. That's probably why it's the official Christmas plant, isn't it?
Well,
it just has
it really
a Christmas
is.
Look.
It is the official Christmas look. And the big thing is when people have to be really, really careful when they buy them. What you want to look at in the center, and I'm sure most people have heard this, but those colored, what people call the flowers, those are actually just modified colored leaves. And if you look down in the center, those little tight little bulb-like things, those are the actual flowers. And so when you look at a poinsettia, you go to buy a poinsettia, you look at that one, and you want those to be green and tight. If they are brown or opened up too far, then that means the plant has been in bloom for a long, long time, and you may not get a lot of enjoyment out of it. And with these new hybrids, literally, they can last till Easter to the point where you're kind of sick of them.
Really?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
We'll take a picture and put it on our Facebook page, Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder. You want the little green nodules. You want tight nodules.
Everyone
That's all
should
I'm
have tight
you.
Nodules, Tony. We've said
I don't
that
want
before.
To go to the penalty box. I'm staying away from that one.
But it does look, you can tell that the green, the red floral part is part of a leaf, but I
right.
never knew it was till you just said that.
Yeah, they're called bracts, actually.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful plant. Very, very nice. is there ever a time, I don't know if you're okay with this or not okay with it, sometimes people will give a gift and it's an artificial plant. Are you ever okay with that, or should you always go real?
You should always go real.
Always go real.
Who gives an artificial? I mean, I buy artificial poinsettias.
It's all right to
house.
Buy an art. You know, an artificial also. We call it permanent.
Yeah. Well, that's a better way to say it.
If you're going
it,
to have
it?
A permanent plant, yeah. I think you should buy that for yourself. But as a gift,
yeah.
I think you should always give.
Give a real
who
one.
Who have you given a real fake plant to?
People who are artificial friends.
From California.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's those superficial get. Ones, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Then they don't get a real plant. They get an artificial plant.
Speaking of artificial, I have to tell you, getting a gorgeous Christmas tree at Tree Time on Pepper Road in Lake Barrington, I have never, ever in my life had a real tree. And this looks so realistic to me. And I will never get a real tree because I don't want the upkeep. It's a lot of work, isn't it?
I wouldn't say it's a lot of work. It's just doing, it's like anything, it's doing it right from the start. It's about picking a tree that's really, really, really fresh. And the biggest thing is that fresh cut. Once you are getting ready to put the tree up, you want to make a fresh cut. It's just like a cut flower. And it doesn't matter. Everyone says, well, do I have to take an inch off or 2 inch? It doesn't matter. You just need a fresh cut.
You need to recut it after you've purchased it at like a YMCA or something?
Or at a independent garden center or an independent garden center. Yes.
Yes, I'm sorry. Yes, or the chalet.
Like the chalet nursery.
But wait, yes, exactly.
So you have to bring it home and cut it again yourself?
Well, if they cut it for you at the lot, like we do at chalet.
Of course you do. The people at the Y do not cut it
right,
for you.
So yes, of course you do. Because because it's just like a cut flower. And once the trunk end of that plant, those cells have sealed over, you can put it in all the water you want. It's not going to absorb anything. And therefore, it's not going to stay fresh for any length of time. So when you make that cut, you generally have 1 to 2 hours to get it home, get it inside, and get it in warm water.
Really? So do you have
window.
A saw at your
it's
house?
A very we have a saw.
Do you not know how to use it?
No. I don't know how to use it.
It's not, you know, you get flowers at the chalet. You know, you can freshly cut the stems and arrange them how you
and it's
like.
It's exactly
a
the
Christmas
same thing.
Christmas tree is a big commitment to cut the trunk.
Well, and the thing that people do that they do mistakenly is they want to do all of these homemade remedies. They want to put aspirin, Karo syrup, and the best thing
aspirin,
is...
Aspirin, in case the tree has a heart attack at some point, you want the aspirin to help.
Well, but I've never met a Christmas tree that's had a headache.
No, that's true, isn't
so,
it?
So, at least not that they've been able to express to me. Right. But at any rate, the important thing is...
You two should go on the road.
We're thinking about it. Tony and I have talked about it.
Make the cut, get it inside, get it in warm water, and then every time you add water, it should always be warm water because
always.
The plant will take up more warm water than it will cold.
Didn't know that either.
Ideally, a tree should last you throughout the entire holiday season. If you get a tree in early December, it should last you right up until Christmas.
It should,
right?
But there are a lot of different varieties of trees, and so the one tree that you want to watch is balsam, which is very traditional, and it has amazing fragrance, but also has a very, very thin needle, and you get it in a 72-degree house with no humidity, or you put it up, God forbid, near the fireplace, and it dries out like that. So they can shed pretty quickly. So balsam, to me, if you get 2 weeks out of a balsam, that's probably good. So, you know, maybe if you're going to have it up for a long period of time, make some other selections.
Sure.
Like a Fraser fir in particular is a wonderful Christmas tree.
Nothing ruins Christmas, Wendy, like a brush fire right there in the living room.
That's right.
Smells good, though, doesn't it?
It smells fantastic.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
312-981-7200. We're talking with Tony Fulmer. We love when he comes up, and listeners love talking to him. He's the Chief Horticultural Officer for Chalet Nursery in Wilmette. You can go to chaletnursery.com. We'll take a quick break, and then we have some questions, some texts about perennials. Is there anything we have to do to get them ready for winter? We will come back and talk about that. It's Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. It's Bill and Wendy. We're talking with Tony Fulmer, Chief Horticulture Officer for Chalet Nursery out in Wilmette. A beautiful location, chaletnursery.com. Bill, you really have given someone a fake plant?
I don't know. It's possible. I just give people gifts, Wendy. I don't really think about it. I want to make the world a brighter place.
I did want to say that a texter put 312, there are people with COPD and other breathing problems, so fake flowers are better for them.
That's who I give it to.
But here's the thing. You got to dust the fake flowers. I had a cat who ate every item of greenery I had, so I went to fake ficus trees and all that stuff. You got to dust them or you're just giving yourself a bigger asthmatic problem.
Right.
Someone wants to know, you don't add bleach or citrus to Christmas tree water, do you?
No. I have not been able to find any evidence from any university or any of the Christmas tree growing associations. Their recommendation is water, warm water, always.
What would bleach do? Why would somebody think that bleach would be a good
idea? I assume, trying to put myself in that mindset, I would assume that maybe they're thinking it kills bacteria that might clog the
uptake. But would it kill the tree too?
No, not necessarily. No.
Maybe they're trying to make one of those white trees that were very popular in the 60s.
That's probably it.
AKA flocked. Yes.
Yes. Right. Please ask Tony what to do with potted evergreens in winter. Stay outside or bring them in?
Okay, that's a good question. Typically, people have potted evergreens because they want to use them and enjoy them all winter long. So when you do that, you should always do that with the idea that it's an annual and it may be dead in the spring. Mm-hmm. There are things that you can do to increase the chances of it being alive, and the biggest thing is the container size.
Yeah.
So number one, make sure that you have a plant that is innately hardy, but then you want a container that's at least 24 inches by 24 inches by 24 inches. Anything smaller than that and the soil volume may freeze solid. And then you have a lot of damage to the roots, and then the plant collapses in the spring.
You don't want that.
You have to know math to know horticulture, Wendy. Learned that. They go hand in hand.
24 inches cubed.
Yep.
Exactly.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. It's impressive.
Like SpongeBob SquarePants.
Similar.
Now, the other thing is if they don't have a container that big, but they still want to save it over, but they don't need to see it all winter, they're not using it for a landscape plant, then they can get a little dolly and they can take it into an unheated garage.
Yeah.
And as long as they keep that soil temperature 32 to 35 and keep it from freezing solid, then the plant will probably be fine in the spring. And the plants don't need light during the winter when they're dormant.
They
like
don't.
That.
Really?
So the garage can be perfectly dark.
I say go garage because I don't like to bring outdoor plants in the house because I worry about bugs being on them.
Well, and that those evergreens, you have to remember where they spend the winter in their native habitat, and they need a cold dormant period.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want to bring them into 72 degrees. They can't grow continuously or be exposed to those kinds of temperatures 365 days of the year.
Alice has a question for you.
Okay.
Alice has called 312-981-7200. Alice, Tony Fulmer.
Yes, I received a rosemary tree for Thanksgiving.
Yes.
And it's getting very dried out, and I'm not sure how to care for it, if I'm doing it right or what.
May I ask what a rosemary tree is?
It's a tree, a Christmas tree made out of rosemary.
Really? It's
very pretty. They sell them at a lot of the stores now.
You're familiar with the Maury Amsterdam tree, correct, Wendy?
Yes.
It's like that.
That's
you put them next to each other.
It's a rosemary tree.
Oh,
yeah,
it is.
Rosemary. Rosemary is an herb of parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to go there.
No, a Scarborough Fair joke? I don't have time for that. So what does she need to know?
The biggest problem with those, do you have it in a very warm room, like 72 degrees with low humidity, and maybe have it in a bright window?
Okay.
Do you
have any of those conditions?
Yeah, I have. The room is about 72, and it's in a window with sunshine. It's a day of sun for it.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing you have to balance. It likes the light, but it doesn't like warmth and really dry. So in a perfect world, if you had an unheated sun porch, or if you're one of those people that really keeps your thermostat down in the 60s, the plant would be much, much happier. And high humidity, cooler, bright light, and if you have it warmer, then you're going to have to keep it out of a south or west window where it can really heat up during the day. But that's why the leaves are probably dehydrating and starting to just drop.
Yeah, that's what they're doing.
Yep.
How about that? He's amazing, isn't he, Alice? Merry Christmas. I think we have time for one more.
Okay.
Linda's on the line. Hi, Linda.
Hi, Linda.
Hi, how are you guys?
Good.
Merry Christmas.
Thank you.
Ho, ho, ho. We only have about a minute here. Did you have a question for Tony?
Just a quick question regarding a hydrangea bush that I have. Is there? Do you cut off the tops of the flower, or do you leave it till the spring, or what's the best thing to do?
That's interesting. That's a matter of personal taste. So if you like the way those dried seed heads look in the winter landscape in the snow when the landscape is kind of bare, you can leave those on, and then you can go ahead and prune those off first thing in the spring when you're doing your shaping of the plant.
Oh, so it doesn't matter.
No, not at all.
Linda, I have Annabelle hydrangeas in front of my house, and I love those big brown, you know, softball size flowers because it just looks cool. Otherwise, if you cut them all down, there's like nothing in front of your house.
Exactly right. I was just afraid that I wouldn't get flowers again in the spring. And then do you put any mulch or anything around the plant to protect the roots? Or
Yes, you should always have mulch on there at least a couple of inches right now.
I'm lazy. I haven't mulched.
One to two inches of either a wood bark product or some type of organic mulch would be really beneficial, you bet.
Okay. Any food or just the mulch?
No fertilizer. No. Just mulch.
Okay, and you can leave the bulbs and they're fine till the beginning of spring. And you don't cut down any of the stems or anything in spring either, just the top of the bulb, correct?
That's probably a half an hour discussion, so if you want to call me at Chalet, we can talk about that. But you have to know, you have to be very specific about the different types of hydrangeas and the way they're going to be pruned.
Some grow on old stems and some have new.
Wow.
Thank you very much.
Wow.
So it depends what kind you have.
Put your hands together. That. Wasn't
Thank
that
you,
impressive?
Linda. Merry Christmas.
How about you, though, Tony? Somebody says, I got a mulch question. You go, it'll be a half an hour discussion. Call me at work, and I'll talk about it with you. That's amazing. Good for you.
Well, glad to do that.
Wow. There's a neighbor I have who also has the Annabelle hydrangeas, and I remember last year or something I had cut them down, and I did it in a bad time where I shouldn't have, and they didn't bloom well, and they looked very sparse. They came back wonderfully, so of course I have not touched them. But the lady down the street can actually groom them, so there aren't that many floppy ones. Like, she knows which flowers to cut off. Is there an art to it so it looks like a...
Well, on that Annabelle, which is the big, 6 to 8 to 10 inch softball-like white flower that's so prevalent everywhere. The big thing about those is while they're shade tolerant, they're really going to be better in sun. So if you have them out in 5 to 6 hours of direct sun a day, the plants will tend to stay much more compact.
Oh.
So they tend to be a little floppier when you put them in deep, deep shade. The plants tend to stretch trying to find light.
Oh.
And don't over-fertilize them. They're not real heavy feeders.
I don't fertilize
feeders, so
anything.
Don't.
I'm lazy.
Okay.
Tony, it's always fun to talk to you, and I want to thank you privately. Tony's working on a project with me. I'm making topiary plants shaped like Wendy and Steve Bertrand and Kevin, and you've been very kind to help me with those. So thank you for doing that.
It's been
that.
A challenge.
I know.
I should do that during the winter. That would be a fun thing to do since
Some
I
topiary?
Can't garden.
Yeah.
Animal topiaries, absolutely.
Yep, that doesn't take a long time at all.
No.
To get that done in a couple of months. Go visit Tony at the Chalet in Wilmette. It's located at 3132 Lake Avenue in Wilmette. The website, chaletnursery.com. The phone number, 847-256-0561. Tony, have a great holiday.
Thanks
for coming by.
Thank you.
More after this. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Thank you, Steve. It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder. 312-981-7200 is our phone line and our text line. Hannah and Dana are here from Flavor HD to talk about a bunch of things with us food-related.
Woo-hoo.
But first, I need to tell you guys this, and maybe everyone in the world knows this except me. On my way home yesterday, I passed by Ed DeBevick's.
Yeah, not anymore.
And it's gone.
What?
Oh. Ed DeBevick's is gone.
It's demoed. It's gone. It's flat.
Seriously?
Yeah.
They had really awesome meatloaf there and terrible
and
service.
And Green River.
They're relocating.
Oh, they are relocating.
All right, good.
Okay, that's much better news.
Yeah, but the actual old DeBevick's location, dead to me.
Still a Melman enterprise or no longer?
Yeah.
It still is.
Yeah,
they had
but
one
that,
at Yorktown in Lombard for a while that didn't last.
It did
very
not
long.
Last. But
and there was another one kind of near, boy, what would it be? Kind of by St. Charles. We used to go sometimes if we'd go to St.
Really?
No. Not St. Charles. Northwest.
St. Lucia?
St. Lucia. There was one in St. Lucia.
St.
Very Caribbean themed at DeBevick's.
Yeah, no, I don't. I think this is the only location that did exist. They actually auctioned off all of the memorabilia and goofy stuff that they had
and
in
the
there.
Wait staff.
The long suffering wait staff. Did they auction
yes,
them off?
Those people were all taken care of.
The first time we went there, Hannah, I thought, because the waitress said, I got to sit down. I've been on my feet all day. and she sat down with us, and I thought, well, that was an unusual thing. And then it happened every time we ever went there again.
Well, that was the viral video.
That's an interesting story.
The viral video. Yes. That there was the family that did not know that that's what part of the shtick was. Yeah. And they put a video about how this waitress was so rude to them, and he couldn't believe it. And she went on Chicago media like, no, that's my gig. Right. That's what I do. I'm rude to people for a job.
It's a testament that people will like that kind of treat, or at least tolerate it in little spurts.
Makes you feel like you're at home.
Yes. That was, I think, the goal, right? Yeah. Yeah. Well, I got sad. I pulled over. I cried a little bit, but knowing that they're relocating makes the world a better place.
Yeah. Next year, they're going to open, like spring, I think, is the focus. And I don't know that they have disclosed the location, but they're moving downtown.
What's so great about it, too, in this day and age, so much more information sharing and just getting more specific about things, is that in the future location, you'll actually be able to email in, and then they'll criticize you and insult you specifically about certain aspects of your life.
When I used to do stand-up, a friend of mine is a comic named Anthony Griffith, very, very funny comic, an African-American man who did a joke saying Ed DeBevick's was his favorite restaurant, so authentic that when his family eats there, they make them eat in the kitchen.
Really?
Yeah.
I love that.
That was one of the best jokes
very,
ever.
Very, very, very
well crafted.
I really liked
it.
All right, let's talk about the Beer Fest beatdown. What is the Beer Fest beatdown?
Beer, well, it is the combination of craft beer. We know it's hot, right? And also cold. A variety of temperatures can be enjoyed at. But it is a very popular thing.
Europe.
Oh, come on, just whatever the style is, you can enjoy it at different temperatures. So it is going to be there along with Christmas, because it is that time of year, the holiday season, along with professional wrestling. So all of these things have been kind of thrown into the situational Vitamix and just boom, hit blend, and it is all there together at the Sears Center on the 12th of December.
How can you drink while in a full Nelson?
It's not easy, but I think it's either a complex, you know, helmet straw system or maybe a
crazy straw bill.
IV. Yes. Yeah, who knows how it is. But they're going to have some of your favorite craft beer out there. It's going to be 2 till 6 on Saturday. Tons of brands, some of them: Bell's, Blue Moon, Lagunitas, Dogfish Head. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are some of your big ones: Magic Hat, New Holland, Two Brothers, local favorites.
Oh, and of course, so good.
Of course, Revolution. So they'll be out there sampling, giving out beers. They'll have some of the brewmasters there talking with some of the people for all the fans. And they're going to have Nikolai Volkoff there.
Volkoff is coming to this?
And Tito Santana.
Cut it out. Now you're just making it up.
Right. And of course, the crowd favorite, Virgil. They will be there.
Did Carlos Santana and one of the Jacksons have an affair?
Yes. Yes.
Well, Carlos was the musician, and Tito was more of the athlete. Right?
Yep, so much so, yeah.
So there's a little bit more. It's got to be scripted, right?
Do craft beers and fake wrestling mix, though, Dana? Are those two things we should have together?
Wait, fake wrestling? What are you talking about?
Is it real wrestling?
Well, the word we use is professional.
Oh, professional wrestling, right. I meant to say. I'm
like,
sorry.
When you really know what you're doing, exactly what you're doing, and when you're doing it,
right.
You're a professional.
Oh, I guess. All
right. Right. Mm-hmm. So it is. So they're going to have actual, not only the guys there, but they're going to have actual a ring there, and they're going to have some of the Nacho Libre guys, Santa Libre.
Oh, I love those guys.
So
That's good stuff.
So a Santa-related wrestling guy.
Kick ass.
Is going to be there kind of orchestrating the whole thing.
That's his professional
literally.
Name.
That's his professional name.
Yeah. Santa Libre. No, yeah. It is.
He's on the undercard. Yeah.
It's Santa Libre. So they're going to have that. It is going to be, it's only $45 and you get 25 samples. So two.
Whoa. Tussocks.
So I know what you're thinking, Bill. You're thinking, that's a lot of tasty beer.
It sure is.
And I know Wendy, who's always very thoughtful, is thinking, who's going to drive? Because it's
right,
out at the Sears
exactly
Center
it.
On 90. So it's a little
Divvy
bit.
Divvy bikes.
Uber.
That would be fun.
So if you are an Uber driver, you want to go to the Sears Center towards the end of that
day. That's your best move.
I appreciate it, Hannah.
Yeah.
Well, because they've done a lot of research, and because of the fine structure, you're right, Wendy, Divvy bikes are much cheaper to mm-hmm. get caught on if, let's say, you've had 25 beer samples. They're very serious about the designated driver, and so designated drivers can get in. Regular tickets are $45 to get in, and the designated driver only $10. So they get to experience the
wrestling.
That
is a great idea.
Well, unfortunately, there's a catch. They can't drink anything.
Well, I know, but they're the designated driver. But that is a great idea to like jump on board with that.
All the entertainment.
So you get all of the entertainment, and there's a lot of wrestling. You get to meet the wrestlers, and I guess beatdowns will be administered or dispensed.
By the
wrestlers when necessary. And for those designated drivers, they're going to have a separate lounge for them, as opposed to just walking around watching everyone else have fun. And they're going to have Roadhouse looping in the designated driver.
They are. I thought of mine, if I was a Christmas-themed wrestler, I thought of a name for myself. Want to hear it? Moose Crunch. Do you think that's a good name?
I think it's a great.
Yeah, I may go with Moose Crunch.
I don't get it.
That's just that would be my wrestling theme name if I was
for
a Christmas,
Christmas?
Wrestler. Yeah,
Turtle Crunch. Turtle Crunch. You
Turtle Crunch also, is also good.
I think there's a natural like O. Henry candy bar connection.
Reindeer.
And some marketing.
No, that's silly.
Really, Hannah's the only one that made sense to me.
The rest of them are good. That one's silly.
So the regular ticket's 2 till 6, so plenty of time to get all the entertainment and try all of the beers. There's probably 30 different breweries there.
Uh-huh.
2 till 6 is the regular. It's $45. You can go to ChicagoBeerFest.com for the tickets. But for Bill and Wendy listeners and Flavor HD fans, we have 2 pairs of VIP passes getting you in at 1.
Oh.
And that includes all of the beer you can drink.
Yeah.
Or, does it include a designated driver?
Right, that's a great idea, Wendy. That includes an Uber. But also lets you in at 1 where there's free food from all sorts of great
there it is.
Restaurants. Nice.
This is a good this is a good thing. Yep. All right. And how does that become available to somebody?
Let's think of before the end of the program, we'll think of something wrestling related that could be like the question for Bill. We got 2 pairs though of the VIP passes, and that's from Craig Keeney over there at the Sears Center.
All right.
I say caller 23 and 24. Kaner's streak is at 23, it will soon be at 24. That's what I say.
There is fighting in hockey, so there's a slim connection there.
All right. All right. I like it. Are we doing that now or are we gonna do that when we come back?
Well, we're gonna think of a great question.
Okay.
And then we'll come back and we'll give away those.
You got it. Hannah and Dana here from Flavor HD. Join in 312-981-7200. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Hannah and Dana here from Flavor HD, and we're talking food. This is an interesting story, guys. Explain, if you wouldn't mind, who Mindy Siegel is.
Mindy Siegel is a big deal. She owns and runs Hot Chocolate. She is a James Beard award-winning chef.
Yeah.
And really renowned in the pastry world specifically. But we're lucky to have her here in Chicago.
And she's doing something that's, I guess we could say, innovative.
She's using, well, sort of. It depends on which culture you come from. But what she is doing is she has partnered with a company called Cresco, who is producing marijuana, and she's using it as an ingredient. So basically, she's making edibles, which that's not innovative. People have been doing that for years. That's what I hear.
Right.
From what I've been told by the kids these days. But what she is doing is she's found this company, she's partnered with them, they approached her, and it is so consistent as an ingredient that she's able to have created recipes to utilize it as really just a very standardized ingredient.
Who can use this? Because in many places,
well, it depends
this would
on the state.
Illegal.
Yeah, yeah. Because it's something that they can utilize here in Illinois for medically approved patients, that is something that can be purchased as an option instead of smoking or doing whatever else you do with
pot. I want pot pizza.
Can Wendy She'd have pot
girl,
pizza,
She
Hannah.
Would be the girl
is that
to get
reality?
It done. Mindy Siegel. If anybody can make it, it would be Mindy.
And is that oregano? No, it's weed.
Yeah, there you go.
And would having that make you want more pot pizza? It probably would, wouldn't
I'm
it?
I'm sure I don't know.
The tests and studies are to follow. But yeah, you wonder what the motivation is going to be. I think part of it is going to be, you know, from a chef and an ingredient standpoint, if she's thinking that there are some unique flavors.
Yeah,
right?
Maybe.
That are just not experienced by the general public. And of course, there's the added, I don't benefit, side yeah. effect or whatever. Or if it's one of those where people who have some of these issues and challenges don't get to taste some of these great foods. And this is a way to kind of kill 2 birds with 1 stone.
I bet this is going to be, in years to come, I bet this is going to be huge business, isn't it? I don't see how it couldn't be.
It absolutely makes sense that it would be, especially because she's doing it here in Illinois where she's located, which is, it is a medicinal use state yeah. now. She's providing it so that people who are using this, utilizing this for medicine, it doesn't have to taste like medicine. They
right.
can still, they can get it in multiple different very elevated sweets and pastries and things. But then it's also something that they're able to distribute, this company, not her, in states where it is legal anyway.
Is she the first somebody who's she's a James Beard Award winner, that's got a lot.
You almost said James Bond. Didn't
James
you?
Bond,
yeah,
she's also
a totally
James
more
Bond
dangerous
movie.
Award,
way more dangerous.
She could be a Bond babe. She's lovely.
But is the first James Bond James Beard. Bond? I keep saying Bond.
She's the first James Beard Award winning chef.
Sorry, I planted the seed, the weed seed,
the weed seed. No, she is
enjoying them in studio as we speak.
Yeah, she is
muscle relaxers kicked in. Sorry.
Okay, yep. There we go. I feel funky.
Am I talking too loud?
She's the first James Beard award-winning chef to publicly talk about this and definitely produce this as a focus.
Right. That's what I was trying to say. And by Friday of next week, I will have said it just as articulately as you just did, Hannah. Thank you very much.
Super welcome.
Because it's the holidays, I want to share this. And maybe everybody already knows this. This is just something I discovered, but maybe everybody already knows. If you like chestnuts, you know that it's fantastic to buy them in a store and then you cut them and then you roast them. But it's a lengthy process. And you could potentially cut off a finger when slicing the chestnut.
Because they move. They move. Do. You know how they have bagel holes? Holders,
yes.
They need chestnut holders.
Well, you can put the chestnut into the bagel holder and then just slice it that way.
Is that true?
Can you do
that?
Absolutely.
But it takes a while to do. Right?
And then the other tip is you can put it, you can do this for other things, slicing tomatoes or whatever, cherry tomatoes, but you put them actually in between two plates.
Yeah.
And then that holds them in place and then you slide the knife in between.
Oh.
And you don't want to cut them in half, though. You just want to.
You don't
want
to cut them in half. You want to do that X on it. Yep. You've seen that. You cut
an
X. What is it called?
Score it.
On the top or on the bottom part? Like on the little pointy.
On the flatter side of the two. You get a flatter
side.
Where
the areola is? You know how there's a darker spot down there?
Yeah.
Go with that.
That's where you exit?
Well.
You're going to exit at Ontario, and then you're going to come.
Because I always exit across. I cut
cross
it where there's like a little point at the top.
No,
that's unnecessary.
I would do it more toward the middle. It's an easier cut.
Because it's flatter then?
Actually, we bring in a moil to cut ours at the house.
I was going to say we should get Orion here to see if you could milk a chestnut.
You could milk a chestnut.
Anyway, where can you get chestnuts?
Well, you can get them wherever finer chestnuts are sold.
Yeah.
But here's good news. A lot of the more foreign-type markets now sell them in a bag. There's a grocery store near me. The brand name is Feng Shui Chestnuts. So they're already deshelled. All you need to do, and you get a good
and come with really good chi.
No, they don't.
They're already roasted. Separate.
They're pre-roasted. They're pre-cut. All you need to do, you can microwave them. It takes 25 seconds,
and you have
yourself a big bowl of chestnuts. Boy, are they good and not expensive at all. When you get them in bulk, they're like $7 or $8 a pound. You can find them cheaper, but good ones are $7 or $8. You get a big bag of them for $1.50.
Where is this?
In Niles.
Once you cross over the border, there's signs.
Right.
Do you remember, and this would have been when we were younger, State Street, when it was still Marshall Fields and it was Carson's and everything. And it was a pedestrian mall.
Yeah.
They used to have chestnut carts.
There were vendors there at the time. Now it's really hard to find them in the city. New York, they're on almost every street
corner.
I don't know why they don't have them there.
Why don't we move?
We're going to New York, Hannah.
Done.
Dane, you got to come with us.
Do we have a giveaway to give away?
Yes.
We do.
Yes. Well, we've got two different ways we're going to do it. One is going to be you can call in and be the 22nd. Was
Third.
It 23rd.
Caner.
Yeah, because we're almost out of time.
Yeah,
so.
The 23rd caller is one way. And the other way, because we got two pairs of VIP passes for Beer Fest Beatdown, the other way is to remember what Bill's wrestling name would be or the one that I suggested as well. So you can do that as well. And then also I want to tell people, listen, Thursday and Friday, filling in for Patty, we're going to have our radio roundtable craft beer special coming up.
That's
going
to be
Thursday
good.
Friday.
Yep. All right. So again, be either caller 23 at 312-981-7200 or any caller, the first caller who knows my Christmas theme wrestling name or the name that you suggested, you also win a pair of those tickets.
Yep.
Excellent. Guys, thanks very much for coming in. Appreciate it. It's Hannah and Dane from Flavor HD. We'll take a quick break. We'll tell you who the winners are. And then Steve has the, Kim is in with the news. That's coming up next. It's Bill and Wendy WGN. Kim, thanks so much. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. We have a winner to announce before anything else, right?
Yes.
Actually two.
Two winners.
In the rare combination of craft beer Christmas and professional wrestling, Beer Fest Beatdown. Of course, you can go to chicagobeerfest.com and get tickets unless you are one of these two individuals, then cancel that order.
Who are our winners?
You've won two VIP passes. One, Mike Sampson from Mundelein.
Yeah.
It's going to be a little bit of a trip. It's worth it. Bring a driver. And Rich O'Brien from Twin Lakes, Wisconsin, showcasing the power of the mighty flagship.
Excellent. Dane, thanks very much. Yeah. Appreciate it. What's going on, Patty?
Thursday and Friday night. So 11 to 2 on Thursday and 11 to 2 on Friday. And we're going to talk all sorts of things. Some food, but then some current events, maybe some terrorism. Who knows?
All right. We'll be listening in. Thanks so much, Dane.
Thank you, Dane. Bill, I got to tell you something. I think Donald Trump is listening to this very radio show.
To our show?
And stealing my ideas.
Why do you say that?
Do you remember when I said we had to get rid of social media and the internet so we could stop ISIS? Do you know he's said that now?
But here's the difference. I know he said that, but I think the difference is you were kidding, right? When
yes.
you said it, it was a joke, but I don't think he's saying it in a kidding manner.
I just, and again, you know, sources say he's going up in the polls.
What happened? What was the circumstance?
Donald Trump has had enough of that internet thing. At a campaign event Monday night, the GOP presidential frontrunner said ISIS terrorists are recruiting people online, especially kids watching the internet who want to be masterminds.
Yep.
Here's his quote. We're losing a lot of people because of the internet, and we have to do something. We have to go see Bill Gates and a lot of different people that really understand what's happening. We have to talk to them, maybe in certain areas, closing that internet up in some way. Did you hear what I said? That internet. Somebody will say, oh, freedom of speech, freedom of speech. These are foolish people. We have a lot of foolish people.
How
what
about that?
What is going on? He is, I really did say it as a joke, but he's stealing my ideas.
Several people have suggested in recent months or probably even years at this point that there should be something going on with the internet where there's a better filtering system, but I don't know that he articulated it quite the way it needed to be done. Now, speaking of Trump and the internet, I need you to do an experiment for me, and maybe you already know this, but I'll run it past you. On your internet, on the one you have by you, put in jebbush.com. Can you do that for me?
I can. I love these little
jebbush.com.
games. It's like you're a professor all of a sudden.
People at home, you can play the same game along with me if you like. Go to your internet and put in jebbush.com.
Am I just Google searching it?
No, just go to that particular website, jebbush.com, and watch what happens. I think you may enjoy it.
All right. Jeb
Bush and then .com. Yeah.
Bush.com. Mm-hmm. I did the triple dubs in front of it.
And what happens? How about this? What happens?
Donald Trump bought that domain.
I don't know that he bought it. I'm not sure that he bought it. I think that somebody hacked it.
Oh, now, no. You can... Yeah, because it redirects to DonaldJTrump.com.
Right. When
so you have to
in,
do that.
So he bought this?
Yeah.
Did he buy it? All right.
Yeah,
I was under the impression that it had been hacked.
No, because I know someone bought a website of mine and some radio.
When you were running for president?
Yes. But, I mean, it was a stupid radio prank where he bought one of my websites, so you would go punch in Snide Remarks Radio and it would turn
go
up to another person. So all you do is you just go buy somebody's domain, and he bought JebBush.com, and now it redirects to DonaldJTrump.com. Trump, make America great again. And it says show your support for Donald Trump. But I don't know that this is him.
You think somebody may have done it
on his own? Yeah.
How did Bush not know, like at some point, that buying a website, I mean, I know he just decided not that long ago to run for president, but wouldn't you have figured out years and years ago, there's a chance I might run for president, I should really buy my own name?
Did you buy BillLeft.com?
I'm not running for president.
Yeah, but I mean, you should all get, you know, that's a little word to the wise out there. Get your own website. There's WendySnyder.com that some realtor used, and then it came. It was just a realtor. It's a common name, I guess.
Oh,
I don't know.
Yeah.
And then it became available, and they want it's now an interested website. So it's $10,000 for me to get the website.
$10,000 to buy your own name.
So I don't know who we had on. Kevin, we were talking to somebody that they put the blah, blah, blah.com.
Yeah.
So I put the WendySnyder.com and got that.
Okay.
But I mean, yeah, you can find out if the domain is available, and there are people that go and buy other people's names and they hold on to it, hope to make money from it.
All right. I typed in my own name, BillLeft.com.
Is it the flying guy?
No, it's it looks like Grant Mulvey has bought me because it's got all his stats and pictures of Grant Mulvey and stuff. That's weird. Why would he do that?
You're a weird dude.
I have no idea why
you
do that.
Jim, I just called you Jim.
And you don't think the muscle relaxers are affecting you?
Well,
seriously?
No, because can I tell you, I call Jim Bill all the time at home.
He's very fortunate. How about this? One of your favorite stars from the TV, you watch this guy on the TV, has been bitten by a fan. Do you know about this?
No.
Norman Reedus.
Oh!
Who's our friend from The Walking Dead.
Daryl.
Plays Daryl on The Walking Dead. Was at a fan convention, a Walking Dead fan convention, the Walker Stalker Com, and a fan bit him. It says, in most cases, art imitates life, but on Sunday, just this past Sunday, one crazed Walking Dead fan flipped out and reversed it by channeling her inner zombie at the Walker Stalker Con, which is a zombie horror and sci-fi fan convention. It's the one that we went to here.
They have it here.
Yeah.
But where was this?
In another city.
And break the skin and everything?
Yeah. According to TMZ and Perez Hilton, I'm sorry.
Oh, thank you.
Not Paris Hilton.
Like, what is she now, the go-to yes. source for news?
Yes. Anytime there's a major news story now, I don't go to CNN, I go to Paris Hilton.
It's Paris Hilton Live. So hot.
According to TMZ and Perez Hilton, during a photo op with Norman Reedus, a super fan named Robin Grover told the actor how much she likes to tell people that they are married. That seems right? If you like somebody, you should always tell your friends that you're married to them. Before physically biting the actor's chest, security rushed in and restrained the woman, forcing her to leave the convention. Oh, that's not fair. She paid her $42. Let her enjoy the convention.
Well, what did he do?
Screamed.
Well, Michael Rooker is somebody that we've had in the studio who I'm not saying would welcome that, but he seems like he'd be digging that a little bit.
Even if you bit him?
I don't know. I'm not going to say go do it, but
that's serious when you bite somebody.
Just a little nibble. You bit your wife in your sleep.
But it's
Did you think she was Norman Reedus?
I thought she was Norman Reedus. Terry, could you put on this Norman Reedus mask when we sleep from now on?
No,
why?
Just don't wash your hair and put mud all over your face.
I bought her a chopper. She knew something was coming. They forced her, Robin Grover, to leave the convention and forgo her remaining photo op tickets. Oh, well, that's unfortunate. Who knows who else she could have bitten? Luckily, the actor's off-screen persona is a little more level-headed than his violence-prone alter ego. Yeah, because if you bit him on the show, he'd bow and arrow you to death.
Yeah, you can understand. It's all he sounds like this now. I have to rewind everything. I still don't know what...
Reedus, that's pretty good. Reedus reportedly did not press any charges. Oh, I would have. If somebody bites me, you're going to have charges pressed against you. Because of the overenthusiastic fan didn't do that much damage.
Didn't do that much damage. It shouldn't be any damage.
Right. When you do these, there should be some sort of an agreement between the person and the fans that everyone's going to leave without bite marks. That should be one of the unwritten rules.
You break the skin, you get charges pressed.
Right.
If it's just a little ang, 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 and you're kidding,
right.
That's okay.
Right.
But you make contact, press those charges.
You break the skin, that there's a sin. That's what Johnny Cochran. You can use it on the show. Sure, Norman, you can use it on the show.
Can you understand Daryl anymore?
Word. Not a word. They should close caption what he says
on
the show.
Oh, my God, yes.
Here's what Robin Grover says. This is the overzealous biting fan. I finally got to meet the love of my life, and then I got banned from the rest of the con, and I lose two more $100 photo ops with him because I lost my mind.
Well,
that's what she said in the picture.
That's what happens.
Right. I got so excited standing beside him. You understand that, though. Somebody that you idolize, somebody that you've seen on TV a bunch of times, they're in your living room. You think you're friends with them. What do you do naturally? Take a chunk out of them.
Haven't you been bitten?
We've all done this. Yeah, well, many times. By Steve Dale. Isn't that weird? Why would he bite me?
Don't do this to me.
I got so excited standing beside him, and I just turned my head, and then I bit him. Now, the way she says it, you kind of go, oh, yeah, things happen.
No, they
don't.
What
can you do? I don't know what came over me. It wasn't my intention to hurt him. And then she put the words, I'm sorry, Norman, to let him know that they're friends.
In blood.
Right, in blood. Right. I have another zombie story for you that's even more frightening. Can I share that with you after the break?
Yeah.
Are you up for a second zombie story?
And this just in, though, the Jeb Bush thing we're talking about paid for by Trump for president.
He did. He is behind this.
Yeah. He or his people. But
I was sure it got hacked.
No.
And then I'm like, well, why? They've let this go for 2 days now? They can fix a hacking, but not if you pay for it. All right. Another frightening zombie tale next. Stick around. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. I understand. Oh, thanks, Wendy.
Zombie.
It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder. I wish that I could show everybody the pictures I have in front of me, because this combines the holiday season that we're in with the zombie craze that is so popular with the kids, Wendy.
And with us.
An Ohio town appears to be backing down in a battle with a homeowner who had put up an undead nativity scene in his front yard, complete with a baby Jesus that is depicted in zombie form. I'll show you the pictures, and we'll get them on our Facebook page in just a little bit. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on Facebook. He's put up an entire nativity scene, and he's done this in years past, but what he's done in years past was just the Holy Family themselves were depicted as zombies, but he got so much attention from this that he decided this year that everybody in the scene, you know, your three wise men and your barnyard animals and your boy that has a lamb. There's always a kid there that shows up, and
he's carrying a lamb.
He's got the one that I have at my house. He has him over his shoulders,
around the shoulders, yeah, like a
working out with
stole.
Him or something.
That's
yeah,
a
like
lamb stole.
A lamb stole. Yeah. So he's got
he stole it. That's why.
Is that how they got yeah. the name? So he's got everybody involved in this.
The animals are they zombified?
They are also. They also look like zombies. Yeah.
Really.
And you'll be shocked to learn that people are not that happy about it. The creche was put together in Sycamore Township by a man named Jason Dixon and his family for the second year in a row, in part with pieces from a haunted house that he runs at Halloween. My family and I, this is Jason Dixon talking, I'm channeling him. My family and I look forward to this.
Can I turn the channel?
Yeah, if you want to. Look forward to this time of year, he said. We use this as our family craft time. But for the second year in a row, Jason Dixon found himself at odds with Sycamore Township over his display. Dixon said last year he didn't apply for the permit for the manager, for the manger, I'm sorry, that he built around the display. That's where they got him. They got him because you have to have a manger permit. They didn't get him because the images depicted in his nativity scene are offensive to some. He didn't apply for a manger permit. You got to get your manger permit. I tell people that. Nobody believes me. This is what got him in trouble with the town. This year he applied for the permit, but he was rejected. Then he was threatened with fines of $500 a day
wow.
unless he takes it down. $500 a day. I know he wants to make a point and say, hey, I'm an artist. Look, freedom of speech. But it's costing him $500 a day. The battle may be over. Town administrator Greg Bickford, which sounds like a made-up name that you would call a town administrator if you were writing a story about a town administrator.
Right.
Greg Bickford told CNN that the problem was not the zombies, but the roof of the display, which violates zoning rules meant to regulate sheds and other structures.
Oh, my goodness
doesn't
gracious.
It sounds like they're just trying to find any technicality, doesn't it? You know that Greg Bickford. He'll go to any lengths. Since Dickford took the roof down over the weekend, he's now compliant, and Bickford said that he's no longer facing any of these fines. But he's still facing plenty of criticism. On Sunday, somebody left a note in front of the zombie baby Jesus, which says, God frowns upon this manger scene. Dixon said his family is not anti-Christian. My wife Amanda is a hardcore Catholic.
Not that hardcore.
I don't know if she's hardcore. I know he says she is, but I'm not sure if she is. And we do have a son in Catholic school, he said. We are not atheists, we are not agnostics, and we are not devil worshipers.
But your kid has been kicked out of the school. I'll bet.
I wonder. Dixon has launched a fundraising campaign to help pay legal fees. Wendy, kick in on that and put my name down in on that, too. And other costs. Of
Why do I have to pay?
I didn't bring my checkbook. I only get $20 a day. I don't have to. I can't afford this. And other costs of the undead display, as well as a local nonprofit, with any leftover funds will go to help create next year's display. So that's where things stand. You've seen the pictures, right? Are you looking at any of the pictures?
I am not.
Let me just show you this one really quickly. It doesn't show in great detail, but you see everybody looking very zombie-like in the scene that you're familiar with seeing, that of the birth of Jesus, and it is a little disconcerting, isn't it?
It's all right.
I don't know. I can see where people would be offended by it, but it's, I don't know. It's just, it's a funny take on it.
It is a funny take, and people have to lighten up.
Right.
I'm more bothered by the fluorescent lights or the, because it's a turquoise baby Jesus. That's what bothers me the most.
He went with a very aquamarine.
Yes. I know you're a Dolphins fan, and maybe you like it because of that, but that is disconcerting to me.
I always think it's weird, and I've seen this happen. Sometimes people will have the nativity scene set up near their house at Christmas, and it's those lit figures, those plastic lit figures of Joseph and Mary. And,
yeah.
And then they'll also throw in a snowman
you can't,
or Santa.
You can't mix and match your nativity
no,
figures.
You can only go with the originals there. Sometimes SpongeBob will be attending the birth, and you go, I'm not sure SpongeBob was around then. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't like
it's
that.
It's nice to have a lot of people at the party, but they have to be appropriate to what the party is.
I wonder what
is.
SpongeBob would have brought.
I don't know.
Squeaky shoes.
Patrick, bring some myrrh. I don't know what he would have brought.
So. I don't know what myrrh is. The guy from Impractical Jokers?
Right, that's who myrrh is. All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break. We'll find out what Steve has coming up on the Wintrust business launch, and then a lot more after that. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
Thank you so much, Kim Gordon. News is breaking as we speak, and you never have to go anywhere else because we've got you covered.
It's been a busy day, and it seems like it's just going to be happening right around our neck of the woods.
Yeah, I was out walking down Michigan Avenue and saw a slew of police cars lined up in front of the Circle Drive in front of Walgreens. And what exactly is going on right now before we talk to Ryan Burrow, Kim?
Well, basically, protesters are back on the streets protesting the Laquan McDonald shooting. They still are calling for the mayor's resignation, along with Cook County State's Attorney Anita Alvarez, even though the mayor gave this impassioned speech today as to how he's going to reform the police department. I think people are just still unhappy, and they want change, and maybe it's just not coming fast enough. I'm sure Ryan has the reaction of why people are hitting the streets today. But basically, I think the idea, and Ryan, tell me if I'm wrong, is that they want to block off Michigan Avenue, that they're headed this way.
You know, it's interesting. They've actually gone the opposite direction. They went to the financial district and then protested there, stopped there for a little bit, and then turned around. They actually kind of doubled back, and they started running, which is kind of interesting, down Wells. And now they've blocked Congress and Wells. I don't know if this was in the plans or not. Police seem to be letting them do kind of what they want as long as they're not breaking windows or anything. Police have set up a line here at Congress and Wells, where they're not allowing them to go west, which makes sense, actually, because this is the entry ramp out of the Eisenhower. So they have blocked off this area. They were, I guess, anticipating this happening. It was kind of interesting because the leaders, as soon as we got out of the financial district, all of a sudden took off and started running. Everything else to that point seems like it was pretty much well organized. I haven't seen any arrests yet. There was a point, I believe Dolly mentioned, at Washington and Clark where they sat down, but there really wasn't much to that other than just kind of regrouping and chanting.
It seems very different from the protest that happened on the Friday after Thanksgiving, where it was quiet and organized. This seems like there was a last-minute decision to change the plans. And then just the fact that you mentioned the leaders running down the street, that seems very strange to me.
You know, we've got two groups that are essentially doing this, right? Before the city council meeting today, we had the pastors come out and the clergy members come out. Let's face it, they're a little bit older, you know. I mean, they're not the ones who are, you know, bruising it with the cops. They're very calm. They're trying to get their message across. And then you've got some young people, the gentleman who we've all seen in those images who stares down police officers. He's one of them who's kind of leading this group, Black Youth Project 100. And they're, you know, they're kind of the, I don't want to say the muscle because that makes it sound like they're bullies, but I mean, they're the young, fit guys who are really kind of the loudest and obviously the fastest here when they took off in the direction they went. So I think you've got a couple different groups of people here, and some of them are better at some things than others. Obviously, every time Reverend Jackson speaks, that's where the microphones go. And now they're sitting down. All right, so we do have everyone sitting down now at Congress and Wells, and police are blocking off the entrance to the entry ramp to the Eisenhower. So that's where we're at right now.
Ryan, you can understand if they're coming to Michigan Avenue, it's to disrupt business. But if they're at Congress and Wells, what other than just traffic flow, what is being interrupted there?
Yeah, traffic flow is a big thing. Remember during one of the first protests, actually that Tuesday when the Laquan video was first released, they did get out onto the expressway and shut it down. Now it looks like what they're trying to do here. So it's not going to be easy if you're in the loop trying to get onto the Eisenhower. They caused a little bit of a headache in the financial district, but a lot of people, you know, they hear chanting outside of their windows, and their first response is to come downstairs and whip out their cell phone and take video, not necessarily, you know, join in. It's definitely been a little bit of a disruption. The great thing about our grid system in Chicago is there's always a way to get around things. So I don't necessarily know if this is going to hurt business one way or another unless you've been you're in the direct path, I suppose.
But it's certainly going to, and if this continues, rush hour usually starts about 2:30 now in Chicago. And what a great place to make your point well known by blocking the entrance and exit from the Eisenhower into downtown.
And by the way, if you are drivers right now, and I see you on Congress trying to get off, just going under the old post office and trying to get into downtown, they're at a standstill, so they're not moving. I'm sorry if you're in this this row of vehicles here. It's we probably got about a few dozen vehicles now backing up behind the old post office. They're trying to get into downtown. That's not going to happen because the police have blocked it off, and obviously these protesters are sitting down. So I guess it would be pretty uncomfortable for those people right now.
Ryan, do we know exactly how much of this was already planned prior to the mayor's press conference this morning?
You know, we did know that this was going to happen, that there was going to be a noon demonstration. We never know the size of these things. To be honest with you, I think a lot of us thought the 9 o'clock demonstration was going to be big, and that just ended up being a few, maybe a couple dozen people at most. You know, eventually there were some meshing of groups that made it a little more crowded. But, you know, because this is outside, I think it's probably not as big of a crowd as maybe some of those that have been inside that have really crushed it. I don't know, a couple hundred people here, maybe.
Seems pretty quiet. I'm not hearing the you know, 16-shot chant that we are used to hearing.
Yeah, well, they were doing it. Now they're all doing it. It appears some moment of silence here. They're raising their fists. They're huddled around in a circle right in the center of this intersection here. Kind of a still moment. I apologize, I didn't hear exactly what they said, but you might start hearing them chanting here pretty soon.
Ryan, everybody to former Superintendent McCarthy, through the mayor, to the Chicago Police Department, everybody has said, we understand the protests. We're not going to do anything to try and stop them. We understand that that's part of the process. But where exactly do they draw the line? What has to happen before the police really do step in and make their side of the stand?
That's a great question. You know, I mean, they've been pretty lenient here. I mean, we've seen this police force act during the NATO summit. What they'll do is they'll flank the buildings, they'll flank the sides, let them essentially have the middle of the street, and as long as they don't start busting windows or spray paint up buildings or doing damage that way, you know, they'll let them go. Occasionally, people have decided, you know what, I want to get arrested, and what they do is they'll sit down and they'll start you know, doing civil disobedience, and as a result of that civil disobedience, they'll be arrested. And essentially, they're put in zip ties, and you know, their names are written down. It's not like they're typically hauled into jail. So,
right.
You know, they're just trying to get them off the street. You know, I think police essentially are probably under the order of the mayor, or letting them, you know, do what they want to do, and you know, as long as they're not breaking windows, it's okay.
And I understand your right to protest, and it's funny how you get two sides to every story, because we have people texting right now. I'd like to know how many of these people actually live in Chicago. Someone else texted, it's nice that all these folks protesting get protest days as part of their benefits package. What do they want again? Let's make dash and body cams mandatory and get on with our lives. I believe many of these people are going to lose pay from missing work today to participate in this protest. It's not like they're.
Yeah, one person outside of the financial district came out and shouted, "Hey, why aren't you at work today?" And then like three people rushed over and started arguing with him.
No.
So, you know, I don't know what everyone's situation is here, whether or not they work, whether they don't work, whether they took the day off, whether they're students. You got to remember, a lot of these protests have centered around Roosevelt University, DePaul, you know, kind of in that South Loop area. So, you know, a lot of these are fueled by students as well. So, you know, I couldn't tell you who everyone is.
Ryan, this is probably a question better suited to Tom Skilling, but my guess is better weather could lead to a larger protest, couldn't it? Wouldn't more people come out under good weather conditions?
Yeah, you would think so. I mean, it's sunny out right now. It's fairly warm for December, and that is helpful. We've seen situations where it's been, you know, pouring rain or snow, and that does tend to keep some people away, but
yeah.
Not the case today. Not a problem, that's for sure.
My question is how much action these protests is actually going to get.
Yeah.
I know we don't have the answer to that right now.
You mean how much change will come about as a result?
Is yeah, because they're calling for the jobs of Mayor Emanuel and Anita Alvarez.
Yeah.
I mean, it's great to protest, and more power to them for getting out there and standing up for something they believe in. I just wonder how much this is going to change what's currently happening.
Well, you know, I mean, think about it this way. You know, all these people are saying that, you know, if it weren't for the court order that made that video mandatory, you know, we may not even have this situation right now. But the video was made mandatory to be released, and that spurred the demonstration, and that brought on the Ronald Johnson case, and that brought on the Philip Coleman case. And so I do believe that there has been a little bit of a snowball effect, and this all started Tuesday of a couple weeks ago, 15 days ago, in fact. And it'll be interesting because tomorrow is the 16th day after that video was released, and these protesters had said they would plan to protest for 16 days in representation of the 16 shots fired at Laquan McDonald. So do I think that it's all going to be over after tomorrow? Probably not. There will continue to be protests. I don't know how organized they're going to be, and I'm sure that these people have seen some success, and they want to keep that success going. Obviously, they haven't gotten Mayor Rahm Emanuel to step down. They haven't gotten Anita Alvarez to step down, and I don't know what it would take for that to happen.
But do you think maybe the protests had anything to do with McCarthy's dismissal? Do you think that played an even small role in his being let go or being asked to resign, I should say?
I think so. I think so. I mean, the fact that there was a big public outcry. And so, I mean, I think we all, you know, whether we came out on the streets of protest or not, we watched the video and we all gasped and we couldn't believe it, right?
Yeah.
And I think there was a certain sentiment among everyone that this is not right. And, you know, these people are acting on that sentiment, whereas a lot of people are staying at home after seeing it. And, you know, I it's hard to say, you know, exactly what's dictated how events have folded. But, you know, I think that everyone was pretty amazed by that video and you know, a lot of this is the result of that. It looks like they're going to be back on the move here pretty soon. By the way, for the people who are stuck under the old post office, it looks like they're turning you around. So hopefully get to your destination. It might be a little bit of a slowdown.
Someone has also texted, why don't these people protest in their own neighborhoods? I think that's the point. People don't go, not enough people go into those neighborhoods to benefit from the protests being there. So they're trying to get the world to see what they're going through.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, no, it's a great point. I mean, if these were all taking place in Ravenswood and, you know, Englewood and stuff, people may not notice it, but the fact that it is going through downtown and it is impacting, let's face it, a lot of people who work downtown are from the suburbs, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
And they're getting exposed to this firsthand. And a lot of people from the suburbs, from Schaumburg, from Naperville, from Palatine, from Downers Grove, from wherever, you know, they're not really aware of all of the stuff that goes on in the neighborhood. So,
absolutely true.
You know, that may be a big reason for their calculated protest.
My only advice to anyone in the future is use the facilities before you get in your car for the commute downtown, because you never know when you might get stuck and you can't turn around. So where is the congestion right now where everything's come to
right
a standstill?
They're still at Congress and Wells. I'm sure our friends at Metro would tell you to ride Metro if you get a chance, because there are no protests on the Metro lines right now.
Not yet.
Of course, we know. Yeah. Right.
Thanks, Ryan, for the report and for the protesting travel tips. You don't get that everywhere else, so we appreciate that as well. It's Ryan Burrow from. Thanks Ryan. From WGN. We'll certainly keep an eye on this throughout the day. We don't know exactly where the protesters are heading. As Ryan pointed out, right now they're at Congress at Wells. Their original plan was to do Michigan Avenue. That may be the end result at some point. We don't know yet.
Just don't take lower whacker, people, because, you know, in a couple hours I'm going to be on it, and I really don't need any more time added to my commute
out
of the city.
That's a fair warning to everybody listening.
And I will use the facilities before I go, just in case.
Just in case. That's smart. A quick break. More show ahead. Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
And we'll keep following this rolling protest that's going on. I love these new terms that are coined
pretty much every day. We didn't used to hear about rolling protests, but
it means rolling on a protest.
It means a protest that is here now, but could be there later, and it will move around. Here's a Christmas gift idea that I don't think anyone will want.
I love when things start out this way. Right. Although, go across the whole internet and you will find things.
Oh, there's plenty.
Like this. List of something no one will want.
Well, if you see any advertisement from, I would say, November 1st through
Are
the end
British?
Of the year. Yeah, advertisement. If you see an advertisement, it will say on there, makes the ideal Christmas gift. And sometimes they do, but rarely. Usually it's stuff like what I'm about to tell you about. Many people in the country, no, I'm going to say the world, have this thing where they have what they call a bashful kidney. Have you ever heard of a bashful
bladder.
Kidney? Is it bashful bladder? I always hear bashful kidney. It means essentially the same thing, which is you don't like to, or maybe you're unable to, go to the bathroom in public. And I don't mean just on a street somewhere. I mean in a public restroom. You don't want to.
We think you're a Borg of some sort.
Why do you say that?
Because you never use the facilities at work, ever. We could be here for 10 hours.
Right.
I don't know if there's a back alley here at WGN.
There's not.
Parking lot?
There is a parking lot, but I don't use it for
how can you not
relieving
go?
Myself. I have an agreement with my body, and that agreement says when you're at home, you can use the bathroom, but when you're in a public place, no thank you, please.
I don't get it.
There's two reasons. Can I tell you what the two reasons are? Because I think I can plead my case fairly successfully. Reason number one is you go in there and you see things that you just don't want to see. Things happen and it's not, guys, aim is awful. You go into a public bathroom and you go, did somebody spin you around when you were going to the bathroom? What happened in here? How could somebody go to the bathroom when it's intended to be there and it's there and it's there and it's there? I don't want to see that.
I don't
need to be part of that.
As a woman, sometimes the women's line is too long, so at a bar or somewhere, we have to use the men's bathroom, and God, you guys are pigs.
You see things in there that just, it's not fit for public consumption, right? So you agree with me on that part.
Yeah, but if you have to go, you have to go.
Oh, no, I've had a talk with my kidneys, and I said, fellas, you wait till you get home.
Yeah. They're male.
I got male kidneys. I do. And the second part of that, I think, even makes more sense, which is, let's say I were to use a facility under those circumstances, and I'm not responsible for what I did, what happened in there.
Don't tell me you're going to think someone blames you.
Well, no, but then you're crossing over with somebody, and there's like no polite way to say, hey, whatever you see in there, don't blame it on me. It was like that when I walked in. I don't want to have that conversation.
We all use the same bathroom here. We all know what it looks like when we walk in, and it looks the same way when we walk out. We wouldn't point fingers.
If everything goes according to plan, but haven't you ever been in the bathroom where you go, what happened in here? It's like a war zone in here.
I don't really assess the situation and say, let me look. I just get in, get out.
Here's what I've done. You know, Jimmy DeCastro's our boss. Have you met Jimmy DeCastro? He's got a suggestion box outside of his office, and I suggest
this. Is that where you go?
Yeah, I go in there. No.
That is hardly a good suggestion.
That would be a challenge because that's a very small target. I always this is my suggestion every month, have a sign-in sheet by the bathroom, so if something is untawdry, we know who's responsible. He's not returned my emails, by the way.
Does he have his own bathroom in his office?
I think he probably does.
Why don't you just use his?
That's like the sign that things are going well in your career, because I've known a couple of people in high places, and they do. They have their own bathroom, and no one else can use it. I would like that. I would use it if I had my own.
Kevin, let's get a bathroom in our office.
Can we do that, Kevin? Just for me.
Well, there's that plant that we have in there.
I'm not using a plant.
I am so sick of guys. I swear to God.
I'm a guy and I'm sick of guys.
I like at stadiums and stuff at like the United Center, I definitely suffer from this.
The shy bladder?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, when there's... Well, just go in the stall.
Well, it doesn't matter. It's just the pressure of knowing that there's like... You know, eight guys behind me that are waiting to go.
Think about that for a minute.
And then
think
there's
about
two guys next to me doing.
Isn't that sick?
It's intense.
And you know the stories of Wrigley Field of old where they had, and I'm not making this up, they had a trough.
I know. I don't get that at all.
Think about that. Did the Marquis de Sade design the bathrooms at Wrigley Field? Who would do that to people?
I know you size up the players, but I mean, come on.
Right. Right.
See, but my husband has taught my boys to just go right to the stall. But that's a bad thing, too, because usually the stall is not the cleanest place in the bathroom.
No, it's not.
But then they don't suffer from the shy bladder
or kidney
or whatever
pancreas,
you call it.
Whatever. You pick the organ. Shy aorta. Shy aorta. All right. Well, now there's an invention, Wendy, that will revolutionize the industry, but not for me, because I already know what it is, and I'm not involved in this. Here's what it says. This is from the Huffington Post. If you're a guy who freezes up...
Where are you going, Kevin? The bathroom? He's going to the bathroom.
Yeah. All this bathroom talk.
You talk about
Kevin,
a shy bladder now.
I can't hold it. I can't hold it anymore.
Let's just wait till he comes back.
You want to do that?
Uh-huh.
All right. That was the weirdest thing ever. He was fine.
Steve, he just walked out. Like, this is... timing.
Anyone recording it?
I hope not.
That's why I don't like going in this bathroom down here.
Because why?
Because Pete McMurray used to work here.
Yeah? What do you think?
I thought there were cameras or recording devices. That was quick.
Did you wash your hands?
You were grabbing the guest. There's going to be a lawsuit.
Wouldn't be the first one.
All right. What is? Can we take a break?
We have to take a break now. So everyone, go to the bathroom, come back, and then I'll tell you.
Wash your hands, please.
Wash your hands, please. And then I'll tell you about a Christmas gift that none of you will buy. It's a public service provided by us, Bill and Wendy on WGN. By the way, oh hi everybody, it's us. It's Bill and Wendy. By the way,
do you get it?
What?
The connection?
No, what is it?
It's When the Levee Breaks by Led Zeppelin.
Oh, Kevin. Well, masterfully done, Kevin. Very, very nice.
Oh, Kevin.
We're talking about it, and I haven't divulged yet what this this potential Christmas present is that nobody's going to buy, but I'll tell you what it is in a little bit. But we're discussing people who have an aversion to going to the bathroom in public facilities, and I said bashful kidney. You said bashful
bladder.
I'm on several different medical websites, not all at the same time, but I've been visiting them. Bashful kidney syndrome is the name of it. So it that I
congratulations. I'm right. You have
I'm a doctor, and you're not.
That you know the name of.
It's bashful kidney syndrome. That's what it is, and it's named after Bashful the dwarf, the Disney dwarf who would never go to the bathroom in public. Here's what it is. It says, if you're a guy who freezes up when you're shoulder to shoulder with a stranger at a public urinal, is this just a guy-only problem? Do girls have this too? I bet some girls have this, right?
I don't think we think about it that much.
If you're somebody who suffers from this, you want to try a product called, the name is ridiculous, but the concept is ridiculous, the Privapee, Wendy. Privapee. The Privapee may be your number one solution. Number one. I didn't write that. That's in the story. This device, which is not yet commercially released.
Of course not.
Because there's no big holiday coming up where you could potentially buy this as a gift for anybody. So take your time, fellas. Is designed to help men hide their goodies as they do their business.
You could just get an ice cream cone, bite off the tip of it.
You could do that.
And use that to hide it.
I'm not. But
one of the big, the waffle cones.
The waffle. You could do that with a waffle cone.
Sorry, Kevin.
But the
jumbo cone, all right?
The fear here isn't somebody seeing what you have. No, it's not.
I'm sure it is.
I don't think it is.
Oh, come on. You have no experience in this, Wendy, do you?
I don't have a penis.
I was wondering.
Currently.
Thank you.
I don't know why I said that.
Because it was funny.
You don't size people up when you're there?
No.
Well, then why can't you just go?
No. Wouldn't it be awkward if you were in a public restroom and you were just like giving somebody the thumbs up or something?
Well, you're not going to
do it.
All right.
You're standing there with
a tape
measure.
312-981-7200. Come on. You baloney.
No
you guys
way.
Are liars.
Although baloney is pretty accurate. No, there's never been a time ever. Steve, have you ever? You don't do that. You can't do that.
None of you can be honest.
No. You'd be on a
Kevin?
List.
Wait, what's the question again? I didn't catch it.
If you kind of, you're at Wrigley and it's the trough and you're out in the open.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not sizing other people
no,
up.
No, Kevin.
There's a strict eyes straightforward rule always.
Every guy in the world knows this rule. But
then there's one time I dropped my wallet.
And it's still there. It's still at Wrigley, Wendy. He was not allowed to pick it up. To this day, he won't go back and get it.
Oh, my God.
Online retailer Plumworld unveiled the Privapee prototype after a company surveyed reflected the anxiety that some have over using public toilets. However, if these images look strange to you, please notice, and I haven't explained the images yet, I'm about to, please note that this device is still in its planning stages, and while many people agree that bathroom anxiety can be a serious issue, the company is not ruling out selling the product as a novelty item. Here's what you get when you buy the Privapee. Are you ready? You get a huge, like a cloak, like a giant-sized cloak.
Yeah, this is going
to
work.
And you wear it, and then supposedly when you're going to the bathroom, you just fan it out like you're the angel of death. You just fan it out so that nobody can see your area.
Okay, I'm not a guy, but if I was in a bathroom and I saw some guy all of a sudden in a cape, I would think that would be the last time I'm going to see what's in my hand.
It's like the crypt keeper has come in to go to the bathroom in your public restroom. It's the weirdest thing in the world. I mean, you look like the Phantom of the Opera in there.
It would even be weirder if you started singing.
Right.
Jim has some urinal rules that evidently I don't know anything about, and I shouldn't because I'm a girl. Jim, how are you?
Yeah, Wendy, there's certain rules. Like, if you walk into the bathroom and say there's 8 stalls, and there's a guy all the way over on the left stall, you got to go all the way over to the right. You got to have at least 1 stall in between whenever possible.
Spacing is key.
You need a buffer?
You got to have at least a buffer.
Yeah. And number 2 is look at the grout lines on the tile directly in front of you. There's no need to turn around and look and take a peek.
No talking either.
No talking.
All right, can I tell you, now I understand why Bill doesn't go in public places.
There's
too many rules.
No talking and no singing of Broadway show tunes, ever.
We just walk in the bathroom, drop trowel, and go. That's what women do.
There's certain bars I will not wash my hands in because I have seen the urinals full, the stalls full, and guys just whip it out and go in the sink.
Oh, think about that.
Yeah, so there's no hand washing. And if you wear boxers, and you can just let it kind of fall out. And
oh, my God. You know, if I owned the Depends market, I would market that for something to wear instead of using public restrooms.
It's not a bad option.
If you go into a better restroom, you'll find that, like that, what's that restaurant up on Lincoln?
We're not naming names.
No, he's saying this is in a positive way.
Okay.
He's saying positively.
Really nice bathroom, but what they do is they tape like that day's sports pages up on the wall.
Yeah.
So you got something to kind of look at while you're doing your business.
That's not bad. What?
No,
you really have to look at something? Can't you just get in, get out?
Well, you could stare at the grout line, but sometimes it's nice to read, you know, the statistics of the baseball game.
Sure. To better yourself.
You know? How does that better yourself?
Because you're learning. You're reading. You're learning. It's a process.
All right.
And if you're really, really short and the guy in front of you is really, really tall and you really, really got to go, you could shoot it between his legs.
Bye, Jim.
He went
Merry
one
Christmas.
Too many.
Yep.
He went one too many.
I thought he was going to say he could rest your beer on his head.
Oh. You just ruined lunch for tomorrow. I can't even think about that tomorrow. So again, this invention is called the Privapee. It's not available yet. So stop lining up at the Apple store because they're not going to have it anyway. Just an idea. It's coming out soon. It's just a giant cloak.
Wait a minute. You failed to mention the best part.
Which
to
is
use
what?
The Privapee, a man must fasten the cape-like cover under his neck as he stands above the urinal.
Yeah.
Suction cups at the end of the fabric adhere to the wall, creating a confined private space.
Right.
All right.
I left that part out.
That is the key part. That wouldn't be too weird.
That's what I'm saying. Who in their right mind would do? Who would go into a public restroom and there's other guys there? And it's like you're making a blanket fort.
And who wants to touch the wall?
Right.
Well, the suction cup's the only thing that touches the wall, and then it folds up nicely, and the device fits inside a backpack.
So it's handy.
Or your fanny pack.
Right.
Really, just get in, get out.
I'm going to dress like that on an airplane next time I'm on an airplane. You think they'll let me on? I doubt it.
No.
I don't think they will. All right. We're going to take a break. We have a lot more coming your way, including Doc Emrick, one of hockey's finest announcers of all time, if not the finest of all time. He's chronicled on HBO's Real Sports this month. Friend of the show. We've had him on before. So Doc Emrick will join us.
And Tamar Manassa, who is Mothers Against Senseless Killings. And it's pretty wild that we're having her on today because we had Rahm Emanuel speaking out about what's happened to police and other people, and also these rolling protests that are going on today. So we'll talk to Tamar about Mothers Against Senseless Killing right after the news. And news is next here on 720 WGN. Bill, it's very rare that we get a return visitor.
So rare.
Very honored that this woman is back with us. Her name, yeah, you can put some headphones on if you want. Tamar Manassa. Am I saying it right?
Yes, ma'am, you sure are.
We know you best from being the founder of MASK, Mothers Against Senseless Killings. We had you on when that story surfaced, and I just noticed something. DNAinfo.com, this was dated, when's the 8th? today.
Yesterday.
Mothers Against Senseless Killings, also known as the Army of Moms, spent the weekend recruiting volunteers for next year. July is coming. June is coming, you said. You're getting people ready, aren't you?
Yes, ma'am. We have to be ready. We have to get out in front of this. We absolutely do. We have to start being a whole lot more proactive. And this is what we're doing.
And getting out in front of this, explain what it is that Mothers Against Senseless Killings does for people who have not heard of this.
We occupy neighborhoods. That's what we do. We occupy neighborhoods to make them safer. We become a presence, more of a presence in the neighborhood than, you know, other elements in the neighborhood that might not be so positive. So where there may be gangs, there are also moms who are going to wipe your nose and make you a meal. I mean, mm-hmm. give you a hug and tell you to pull your pants up. There are moms who are going to do that as well. So we try to bring some sort of balance to the community because there has been none for so long. So that's really what we're trying to do, and that we've seen that that really does deter violent crime.
Okay, but just when we spoke to you before about this, it was I didn't understand it. Like I said, a hug could really make that much of a difference, but it humanizes things. Is that your thought on that?
Yeah, hugs are warm. They're warm. And, you know, just the gesture of hugging, you're opening yourself up to someone and you're letting them in and you're holding them close to you. That is a very intimate thing. It is. And a lot of people, we're so busy building walls instead of building those bridges to each other. And a hug is a bridge. It's a bridge to someone else, and you're letting them in, and we don't do that enough.
This is a question that doesn't have an easy answer, but how did things get so out of hand?
Oh, yeah, that's not an easy answer at all.
It isn't.
No, but it's
things are, be honest,
years
a mess.
And years and years and years of neglect, just years of it. It has been allowed to compound and grow just exponentially over the years.
Yeah.
There are so many things. It's education. It's public housing. It's so many different problems that should have been tackled, that would have taken care of some of this, but it wasn't. It was just allowed to go unchecked. And now you just have this thing that no one really knows. How do you deal with all of this at one time? And especially every day, it seems like there's a new scandal. There's something new breaking. It's something else happening. And it's just like, you know, you're going further and further down the rabbit hole right now. And we could have done things. We could have done little things before to stop these things from happening.
Okay, now it's so huge and it's taken on a life of its own in some of these neighborhoods. Of course, Mayor Emanuel spoke this morning, and it's weird because I heard him mention there are moms and grandmothers on the porch who are watching their kids as they go through the neighborhoods. And he says, you know, respect is a two-way street. We need to respect the citizens of Chicago in order for the citizens of Chicago to respect the police department back. He got very emotional today, and me, little Miss Suburban White person, says, I think he means it. You think he means it?
Not so much. And, I mean, I really do wish he did. But even if he did, it would be too late.
What are you not hearing or seeing in him that makes you believe that he's just speaking the words, that he's not meaning what he says?
He's not owning up to anything.
No.
Because Rahm knew. I mean, there have been complaints. I made some myself over the summer sitting out on a block. I made my own. I actually talked to people in his office about things that the police were doing just in the area that we were in. We didn't really get any help with that.
Nothing.
No. So now that it's gotten so big and everyone, I mean, when it's one mom or it's 10 moms making noise about it, then, you know, you can really sweep that under the rug and no one really knows about it.
Yeah.
But when you have 1,000 people in the street on Dearborn and on State, now you have to address it, Mr. Mayor, don't you?
Yeah.
But now it's gotten too big. Now it's a real problem. Before, it was just an inconvenience, but now it's a problem for him. And he waited too long to do this. He's doing what he has to do because he has to do it right now. But if he had a choice, he wouldn't be doing it. And I know he wouldn't, because he didn't do it in June and July when I complained about what the police were doing and the relationship that they had with the young people in the community that I was in and the communities that I have other posts in.
Right.
I mean, there were ample opportunities he had to address this. He didn't do it.
Tamar Manessa is in the studio with us, founders of Mothers Against Senseless Killings. It's known as MASK. And here's my question to you. For people out there that are saying these are bad neighborhoods, they're poor neighborhoods, you know, they're disrespectful, How does it get like that? I know we had you on before, and you said that there's a lack of hope. There's a lack of opportunity that I got to be honest with you, I didn't know about before talking to you. We hear about it, but we truly don't know about it. You know about it firsthand.
Yeah, yeah. And I get that because a lot of volunteers that MASC have, they come from Portage Park, from Lincoln Park, from Humboldt Park, from Wicker Park. They come from all of these other parts of the city, and some aren't even from Chicago. And they say the same thing. We didn't know that it was like this. We didn't know, because it's kind of like there are communities on the south side and the west side that are like in a bubble. They're a bubble. People really don't go in, and many people don't really travel out because the employment rate is so high, you're not going off to work. And no one's coming to visit. No one's coming to see what's going on. Or if you need help, no one's coming into it. So you're pretty much in this bubble. So whatever happens in the bubble, no one hears, no one cares about. And it's only when groups like MASC starts to go into these places where there, you know, there are these bubbles, that we can actually be the voice of the people that are inside of the bubble. When we come out, we talk about, like right now, how we're talking about what's going on in the neighborhoods. It is. It's an educational thing. It's lack of opportunity. It's lack of hope. It's the feeling that they don't exist, that they really don't live in this city, that they aren't a part of this city.
They're isolated, it sounds like.
Totally,
I mean,
totally and completely. And whatever happens between people in the neighborhoods and the police, it stays in that bubble. It does.
Tamar, for those of us who don't live in these neighborhoods, this is what we're told goes on. That for a kid growing up in those neighborhoods, they're given two options as a way to get out of those neighborhoods. Number one is sports, which is a numbers game, and it's unrealistic to think that every kid that's playing basketball or football is going to get a scholarship, and the other is drugs. That's what we're told on the outside. But there's got to be the third option that most of us have, and that is just working your way up and going to school and getting a job and then a better job and a better job. Is that an option to these kids, or is that impossible?
Huh? You would think so, huh?
You would hope so.
But that's almost as elusive as the
sports dream.
The sports contracts.
Is it?
The big contract is the kid who makes it out and goes to college and moves up. And no. The American dream is not. It's just not even on the radar of most kids in Inglewood or in Lawndale or Austin. No, they don't think like that. No one has allowed them to even think like that. No one has even given them hope enough to think that way. That's why there are so many problems with the public schools right now. They don't learn hope in those schools. They don't learn that. And I mean, it's kind of like, if this is something that you can never have, how could you believe that you can ever have it?
Right.
It's just like a mythical thing. Like, this never happens to anybody.
Is that fixable?
I think it is. But it is. I mean, I generally think anything is fixable.
Isn't there a solution to everything?
It is.
Somewhere? But you just have to find it?
It's so deep, and it's going to take so long to get out of it. And it's heavy lifting. So it's going to take everybody on board trying to fix this problem. It's going to take all hands on deck. It really is. But the thing is that I wonder is how many of us are actually willing and committed enough to actually be a part of helping out with the solution.
Right.
Because everybody is not into that. Because a lot of people do have that attitude that that's your problem. That's where you live. That's your problem. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps. You do this, you do that. But it's not that simple. It's not that simple.
What about this 9-year-old who was shot, who was lured into the alley and shot? And the father is saying, I'm not a gang member. I had nothing to do with that. How does that happen? And how do we prevent that from happening again?
I think that is really tragic. It was really tragic, and it was really sad. And it was kind of like when the young man was killed. I think he was 9 years old, too, 4th of July. And when he got killed, I said the same thing that I'm saying right now. It's going to happen again if we don't get in front of it. If we don't stop it as parents, it's going to happen again.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's really sad to see 9-year-olds dying. It's sad to see babies dying from gunshot wounds. That is the worst thing in the world.
Unimaginable.
It really is. But if parents don't get involved, and if the community does not get involved and get in front of this, it's going to keep happening.
So what do you say to that father who was an alleged gang member and claims he's not, and he had nothing to do with it? What do you say to that father to make him parent that child and prevent that from happening? What can you do?
I think with that father, there's not really much I can say to him, but I have to ask him, what is it? You have to try to figure out what's missing in his life. What if he was a gang member, whatever he was, what drove him to be that way? Because there's a motivation behind all of it.
Yeah.
No one just wakes up and decides that they want to be a gang member, they want to sell drugs, or they want to put their lives on the line every day for no money or for just nothing. No one does that.
But is the pressure such with a kid growing up under these circumstances where they say to themselves as a young kid, I don't think I have an option. I'm getting such pressure to join a gang just to fit in that I don't have an option of saying no to these people. Is that a reality?
Yeah, that's a reality. That can happen. That can happen. But that's why we need more groups like us, like MASK, because we do offer an alternative to that. Because a lot of kids are looking for family.
Yeah. They want to belong. That are gonna,
exactly. They want to belong. They want the support. They want love. They want this. Sure. So, I mean, if we can offer an alternative to that, that's what we, you know, want to do. But it's, we can't do it if it's only 10 of us. We can't do that for the whole city. That's why we need as many people to get involved as we possibly can get.
And we'll find out if you would like to help out. We'll find out how you can do that. 312-981-7200 is the number to call. Tamara Manassa in the studio with us, founders of Mothers Against Senseless Killings, MASK. You have a website, getbehindthemask.org. You're on Facebook. You're everywhere. You're doing a noble job here, and you can't do it alone. So we'll talk about how we can get involved and help out. It's 312-981-7200. Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder in the studio with us right now. The founder of Mothers Against Senseless Killings, or MASK for short, Tamara Manassa. And you have brought someone with you who originally said he didn't want to go on the air, but I knew as the conversation continued, he'd be unable to not jump in. And this is Gwinyayi, a member of MASK Men. And your job, Gwinyayi, is to kind of fill in for maybe the male parent that's not around anymore. Is that true?
Correct. When we're on the blocks with these young men, we feel that they need to see men who look just like them, who aren't necessarily in police uniforms, but who also aren't afraid to engage them and hold them accountable for their actions, because we are the adults and these are our sons, these are our nephews, these are our younger brothers. So we cannot be afraid to go to them and hug them and let them know that we are out here and we care. But also, if you are doing something wrong that is having a negative effect on the neighborhood, that has to stop.
As you serve as an older brother to some and a father figure to others, what is the gist of the conversation that you're getting? When kids come to you and they want to talk about the life around them, what are you hearing?
Well, actually, there's a sense of hopelessness.
Is there?
You know, because one block we went on, as we stood on the corner, at least three young men came up and said, I was shot right here on this corner. One was still in a leg cast from a gunshot wound. So it's almost easy for us to want to walk away and say there's nothing that can be done. But there has to be something that can be done, because all of these young people, they respect somebody. There's somebody who they have to look in the eyes and be held accountable for what they're doing. There's somebody who they have to kind of tell lies to, you know, so that they won't know exactly what they're into. So we're trying to bring that humanity out of them, because if there's somebody who they really love and who loves them, then there's hope for them.
Sure.
I have two boys, and I will admit, they're 13 and 16, and sometimes they lie to me. And you know what? I lied to my parents when I was growing up, too. But when push comes to shove, I'm trying to please my parents, or they're trying to please me. If you have no one that you're trying to please, why do anything right?
Exactly. There has to be someone whose opinion of you value. Because if there's not, then it's easy to not value your own life. Because when these young men are, you know, behind the barrel of a gun, they're not seeing the person in front of them as themselves. Mm-hmm. If they did, then it would probably be a lot less easy for them to pull a trigger. Mm-hmm. So with our presence, we want them to see us and see themselves in us, so that they start seeing themselves in each other.
This is a question for both of you. What is the relationship like with the police, with the Chicago police right now? When a police officer or two comes down the street, what is that relationship like? It's mixed, isn't it?
It is. I wish it was better than what it is, because I really don't feel like MASK can really do all that we want to do and all that we could do, because we do need the police and the police need us. You know, we could really help each other out a great deal.
Yeah.
But I don't think, I think in theory, the idea of community policing is a good one until they actually see community policing, because sometimes the community has to police the police.
Yeah.
And I think that is a problem. That's something that they really weren't ready for. But that is, that's a promise that I made to the kids in the community when I first started. I'm here to protect you from whoever comes to do you harm.
Mm-hmm.
If that's somebody else that looks just like you, that's another kid, whoever it is, even if it's the police, I'm here to see things. I'm here to watch everything.
Are black police officers a little bit torn right now in the area? They must be.
Do you have black police officers there? Or is it mostly white police officers?
Mostly white police officers. Especially
really?
After 3 p.m. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. First of all, here's just a stupid question. Why? It doesn't seem to make sense to me.
It doesn't. And it doesn't make sense to anyone.
Am I being naive?
No,
Am I not seeing the connection?
It doesn't make any sense to anyone. It doesn't. Does it make any sense to you?
No, but it's a microcosm of what's going on with police forces nationwide. You have police officers coming from different neighborhoods, and they come into a neighborhood that they normally wouldn't be in,
right,
and they're policing it. And so, naturally, there's going to be some type of animosity, because some of them probably don't want to be there anyway.
Yeah.
And so they stop looking at the residents as people and citizens, and it becomes more of a task and more of an overseer type of situation. And so that's where you get this friction between the community and the police.
When I was always taught, if I get pulled over for speeding or what have you, completely cooperate with the officer. And to this day, I still do, because at this point, I guess I've had some officers who have been a jerk to me, but I've never been in fear for my life. But if you get an officer who is not giving you any respect, and it's like, why would you trust them? But this can't continue like this.
No.
Because the police, they are there to help protect where we live and keep things in harmony.
You would think that.
So, I mean, the majority of the police are not an issue, are they? I mean,
I wouldn't like to paint the police with a broad stroke.
Right.
I wouldn't,
Good.
But it seems like that's what they've done pretty much with kids in our community and with people in our community, period. We are all, it's a very us versus them kind of attitude between people in the black community and the police. And that is a problem. So the same way I wouldn't say that all police are bad, the way that they look at us in our community, even by the end of the summer, pretty much we're out there volunteering and we're cooking food and we're, giving all this love. But we were even a part of that them. We were the other.
Even though you were there to help and make peace, you were not treated respectfully.
We were treated the same way they treat everyone else in the community. And actually, it was one of the police officers from that area. The video went viral. And he was actually on YouTube, caught on camera, telling kids from the neighborhood, oh, Mike Brown deserved what he got.
Oh,
and the
God.
Reason why we harass black people is because those are the only people that are here. And if you don't like it, you can move out.
What?
And that was the attitude. And this was one of the police officers that I complained about.
What happened? I mean, again, maybe I'm just very naive and a suburbanite, but I thought you had to live in the district in which you were a police officer. Wouldn't that make some sense?
I think you only have to live within
the
city limits.
Just in the
city. It's not the district.
Because to me, that would make more sense. Someone who can
have a relationship with the community.
A connection.
Yeah, but
absolutely.
Nope, they don't have it. They come from all over the city, especially TAC officers. They're from different places. They're not from the immediate community, and they have no real relationship with the people in the neighborhood. And they don't actually work on fostering one either. They are there to do a job. They are there to see some stuff, to oversee it. And that's what they're there for. They aren't. I was told we don't have time to give hugs. That's not what we do.
Well, that's upsetting.
Yeah.
And I know they're talking about all sorts of reform.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm being hopeful here. Maybe that's one of the things
Hug
that
therapy.
They look at. That should definitely be one of the things that they look at.
Yeah.
But maybe what we're discussing about having people who know the area, who are indigenous, and say, hey, I've been here. I've lived on these streets. Maybe
and
that's
then they
not
have
a
personal investment in the area because they're
pride
living
in
there.
Protecting your own community.
Yeah.
But one thing I want to say, anytime there's a crime and they're having problems getting witnesses to come forward to help them solve this crime, they start talking about the no snitching policy that's preventing them from being able to do their job. Well, what's preventing these bad apples from being picked out within the police department? it's no snitching.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. So there's a contradiction there
yeah.
because they want the community to be involved in helping with these investigations. But then they turn around and they will threaten their own fellow officers and make them not want to come forward
right.
and speak on police officers who are doing wrong. So that's a problem, and they need to address that.
All right. Unfortunately, we are out of time. We need you guys to come back. What does Gwen Ya Yi mean?
It means stand firm from the Shona language. It's from Zimbabwe.
That's what my name, Bill, also means.
No, your name means at the beginning of the month.
That's right. Shovel in the mailbox. That's yeah. what I
that money.
No, we don't right. like you.
You're absolutely right.
Because of your name.
Sure.
And, of course, Tamar Manasseh, founders of Mothers Against Senseless Killings. Very briefly, everyone's wondering, you know, what about the family? Isn't it the family's responsibility? That's what MASC is trying to do.
We are the family.
The only family that they have
yeah,
at this point.
We are the family.
And how can we listening today that don't live in this in these areas, how can we help? What's the best way
well,
to find out?
We have a website, www.getbehindthemask.org. You can go there and find out how you can volunteer, make donations, get involved. We'll be starting patrols back up spring break. And it's the first day of spring break for CPS students.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll be starting back up then, and we'll be going, you know, strong during the summer. And we are hoping that we have an army of thousands because, I mean, we have thousands of corners and blocks in this city.
Right.
And we need parents on all of them. So please go to the website. Check it out. We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. I don't know how to tell you how to find us on Instagram because I'm old and I don't know. But we're on Twitter too, but kind of the same deal.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's if you want to get involved, that's how you find us.
All right.
God bless you and God bless your neighborhood. Please stay safe, both of you, Gwen Ya Yi and Tamar Manasseh. You can go to MASK, Mothers Against Senseless Killings. That would be getbehindthemask.org. Good luck.
Thank you so much.
Thank you both. We've got news coming your way next, and then Doc Emrick. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Doctor, give me the news. I got a bad case of loving.
Wendy, I was telling you a week or so ago that I was watching HBO, and one of my favorite shows on HBO is called Real Sports with Bryant Gumbel. And all of a sudden, I didn't know this was going to happen, they do a profile on our friend Doc Emrick. And I learned a whole lot about Doc that I didn't know. And we said we should have him on and talk to him about it. And Doc is here right now. Hi, Doc. How are you?
It's good to talk to you. I hope you guys are doing well.
We are doing fantastic.
We certainly are. And we just love talking to you. I know you're probably WGN's biggest super fan, all starting with Lou Manfredini.
Oh, yes. I have it on. As a matter of fact, I had it on overnight. I'm in Montreal. And rather than listen to local stations, I'm sure they're very good, but I just like familiar voices. So it goes all the way back through Sochi and Russia. You're right. I'm a big fan of the station. I'm here in Montreal right now looking down at the ice from 8 floors up. Life is good. Got a game coming up at 7:30 tonight, and the fact that I can get in free, it's just a great deal.
It's the Canadians and the Penguins later on tonight, correct?
Bruins.
Oh, the Bruins tonight.
Canadians-Bruins this time, and then the Bruins and the Penguins next Wednesday. So they just let me into a lot of really good games.
Yes, they do.
This is sort of Camelot in Chicago, you know, when it comes to the Blackhawks. Three championships in 6 years.
Yep.
The playoffs started today. They'd be playing those wonderful people from St. Louis. Wouldn't that be fun?
Wouldn't that be fun? Yep, we'll take that. There's been a lot of excitement over at the United Center of late, and a lot of it has to do with Patrick Kane. What are your thoughts on his streak?
What a magnificent thing he's gotten going here. I looked it up, and the Cubs were playing the Cardinals the last time he came up empty in a game.
Really?
My goodness. It goes back. He started the streak October 17th. My Pirates had been knocked out by then, and the Cubs were then dealing with the Cardinals and taking care of them. He had an empty game in there, and ever since then, he has filled it up some way or other. Fantastic year. Today, he is second in goals, second in assists in the entire league, and first in points.
Can I throw some numbers?
The Hawk was that high.
Can I throw some numbers out at you? We
yeah.
have Patrick Kane, 600 points career right
First
now.
Career, yeah.
378 assists at this after last night's game, and 222 goals.
That's impressive.
And he's still a young man.
He's still a young man, and you know he had a circus going on in the news, and I'm not going to say either way, other than I think, you know, it's proved to be an innocent man, does well. He kept his mouth shut, and he is shining like a diamond on the ice right now, and good for him.
Yes, our approach through all of this was that he had been accused, but right. not charged with right. a crime. And so as a result, he was like anybody else out there. The only difference is he's better than anybody else out there this year, the way that he's been playing. And we knew that that was what he was capable of because he's done it before. So this is nothing new. And the reason I mentioned that it's sort of like Camelot there now is that he and Jonathan Toews are long term, and that the reinforcements that they have in are for something pretty solid in the future. And you don't go glorifying Stanley Cups in mid-December, but you realize that you're in the midst of a time in Blackhawks hockey when they are performing really well and they're fun to watch. And so in the pursuit of happiness, sometimes you just sit in the stands and be happy.
And, Doc, in addition to his incredible talent, you have to admit, fate is smiling on him a bit. We've had several instances, including last night's game, where something happens in the waning minutes of the game. There was a hand pass a couple of games ago. There was the strange errant shot that went in the net last night. The fates seem to be liking Patrick Kane right now, don't they?
The hockey gods are funny. They have flowing robes, missing teeth, and some stitched faces. But they do have a sense of humor about things. And the hand pass was one. And then last night was just fortunate. And, you know, there have been times in his career and that of any other player that you come up empty for five games in a row and you think nothing's going to be right. So it all balances its way out in the long term.
I am finding myself hoping against hope that Kaner keeps his streak going more than I'm caring about the Hawks winning.
Is that right? Yeah.
It's gotten to that point. It was pretty exciting for the new guy, rookie Dennis Rasmussen, to score on his first NHL game. That was so exciting.
Yeah, I was listening to John and Troy last night from here in Montreal, and it's not that I don't know French. But the game that we got was in French, and so I just turned the sound down because I didn't understand it, but it was the Islanders in Philadelphia. And so I turned John and Troy up so I could monitor two games at once. And I heard the call of the kid's goal. They just have a couple of guys in Montreal that scored in their very first game too, Daniel Carr and Sven Andrighetto. And it's a thrill to be able to play in an NHL game. And 1,000 games from now, if I run into an older player, I'll say, do you remember your first game? They not only remember it, they remember the teams, they remember who their line mates were, and they remember if they had a chance to score.
Andrew,
it's remarkable that one. Now game number two is different.
Sure.
First game they remember because usually their family was there.
Yeah.
Sometimes flying across the country to get there to watch their kid play in his first game.
And to listen to Eddie Olczyk showing that Andrew Shaw went up to Rasmussen to just yell in his face and say, how about it? Isn't that great? Because Shaw actually scored his first game with the Blackhawks as well.
Yeah.
Artemi Panarin, Jonathan Toews, there are a lot of Blackhawks that scored on their rookie night.
Boy, if I ever get laryngitis.
I know. I am so into this now, Doc. I really am.
I've got this stuff cold, Bill. She's got this stuff cold.
I'm going to lose her to the NHL, Doc. I know that. Our guest, of course, is Doc Emmerich, the great NHL play-by-play announcer. Now, Doc, I was telling Wendy, I saw you on this HBO show on Real Sports, and I learned a couple of very valuable things about you, one of them which Wendy refused to believe, so I need her to hear it from you. They say there on the show that one of the broadcasters that influenced you the most in your career and in your life is Fred Rogers. Is that correct?
Well, in a way. Now, here's the clarification of that. When Fred was accepting the Lifetime Achievement Award for an Emmy in 1997, he said to a group of daytime Emmy candidates in New York, take 10 seconds and think about all the people that got you to this place this day. Something to that effect, and I'll keep the time, and it was quiet for 10 seconds, which seems very long.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it's a wonderful idea that he had, and I would need longer than 10 seconds, and why not snail mail the people that I can remember and find the addresses on? So that was the influence that Fred had there. I guess they thought there was a personality similarity, and I'll let them determine whether that's accurate or not, but the connection there was with Fred was about doing that. So I set about, and I'm still doing it for that matter, remembering all the people back from grade school teachers on to people like Eddie Olczyk that I work with, just to put in writing and snail mail it, because it takes longer to think when you're writing and
sure.
you're And if you jam something together on an email, you become redundant and careless. And I think this takes a little more thought, and you can do one in 5 minutes. And the post office department needs the money.
Yes.
So it's just a way that I try to, in writing, recognize people that have made a difference in my life. And of course, you wind up hearing back from people a lot of times. And a certain retired network executive wrote back, and he said, you know, the other day I was just thinking whether I've made any difference at all, because here I've had this long career, and now I'm just sitting here. And then your letter came. So that told me that it was worth doing, at least in that one occasion, that it made a difference for him. And I'm glad of that.
What a nice thing.
That was the Fred Rogers influence. I think Ernie Harwell had a greater influence on my life than Fred did. But Fred's idea was the one that I sort of ran with.
What a great thing to do. Beautiful. I think we should all take the time to write a letter, not cut and paste,
right,
and send it out to the people who have really influenced our life. What a great
thing. It's a wonderful idea. And then, Doc, if you wouldn't mind, the other thing that I found out about you during this profile, there were a lot, but the thing that really made a lot of impact was they showed you calling a game, and instead of just watching the game through the glass and looking down on the ice and on the arena, you were kind of watching a close-up screen in front of you as you were calling the game. I didn't envision you doing it that way. Is that how it's normally done for you?
No. I usually wind up, you know, what they had there was a camera that was directly in front of me. And it was the size of a pencil.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was shooting that look straight ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a monitor that was fair size to my left. I usually look at that when play stops, because down in the truck they'll have something they'll want Eddie or Pierre to do, and that helps me shift that way. There have been only two times that I've called a complete game off the monitor. Both of those were at Yankee Stadium. And perhaps there'll be a couple coming up in Minnesota, the outdoor game, and in Denver, because you are so far away. The sleeve numbers are only 4 inches tall, although
right,
for outdoor games they make them larger, and it's very hard to identify players, which is what I should do.
But you even said that it's not so much that you're not looking at numbers or names, but you just recognize players by their skating mannerisms.
Sometimes I do. Now, I still look for numbers, and I know that Brad Richards' career has gone really well in Detroit, and I'm happy for that. But he was a left shot, so was Marian Hossa. He was 91, Marian was 81. They played on the right side a lot, and they'd come down that side. And in Chicago, you're a long ways away. And, boy, there were times I used to kick myself because I'd had the wrong guy. Now, close up, they don't look alike. But from, you know, 250 feet or so away, the 81 and the 91, it's about a half an inch of material difference, and there were times I butchered it. I haven't done a perfect game yet, but but Brad's having a good time in Detroit, and I'm happy for him. And now there's no 91.
Oh, that makes it easier, doesn't it?
I'll tell you what happened to me last night. Is it Teuvo Teravainen made a goal last night in 86. In my head, I saw 88, and I thought, yes, the streak is still on. And this is before Kaner did score the empty net goal and get the streak up to 23. But it happens to the best of us.
See, you have the same problems we do. Wendy, you're geared for this. I know you're having a good time in the afternoon with Bill, but you can do this.
I'm telling you, and it's pretty funny. I heard my husband telling somebody,
you have to take a pay cut, Wendy.
That's all right. I heard my husband telling one of his friends yesterday, yeah, Wendy is so into this hockey thing. It's so fun watching a game with her.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I've gotten bitten by the bug.
Good for you.
Doc, it's so much fun to listen to you call a game. And, boy, it must have felt good to hear other sports announcers talk you up on that Real Sports Show, because they sure did. And you deserved every word of praise. You really do.
That's so kind of you to say. Yes, it was a shock. Al Michaels has been a supporter for a long time, and I'll never forget, I had my first Olympic experience in 92 in Albertville, and he and I knew a man named Art Kaminsky who handled a lot of the players that came out of Lake Placid in 1980 when they turned pro. And Art told me, do you know what Al Michaels said about you? And this is before the 92 Olympics. No. He said, Mike Emmerich has the best grab of the geometry of hockey of anyone. And when that was coming from Al Michaels, I needed some confidence going into my first international show, and that gave it to me. Al's been a wonderful support for me, and there's nothing I can do to give it back to him.
Beautiful. Fantastic.
I did write him a letter.
Did you? Good.
I might be writing you a letter, Doc.
Okay.
Stay by your mailbox. You're going to start getting letters from us.
I'll be fine. It's always fun listening to you, and I know they're there have been some challenging times recently, and you guys have handled it wonderfully. I just the civility of Steve Bertrand always amazes me.
Rock solid.
I listen to the news delivered by Steve, and it seems so civil. It never seems so bad when he's reading it.
Yep.
His news reports are very civil. How he treats me, that's a suspect.
That's very nice of you, Doc.
The only thing, being on Steve's side, I would have to say, Wendy, as a hockey person, you probably had it coming.
Absolutely right, Doc.
That's even nicer, Doc. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bill, take care. Merry Christmas to you. Happy holidays to you. See you, Wendy.
Thank you, Doc.
And Steve Bertrand is here to bid you a happy holidays as well.
Bye-bye, Doc.
It's Wednesday in January. I get to be at United Center for the game with Pittsburgh. I'm looking forward to that already.
Oh, fantastic. We are all looking forward to that same game. Thank you, Doc. Happy holidays, sir.
Okay. Take care. All the best.
Thank you. I love him.
Doc
I absolutely
Emmerich.
Love him.
Such a nice man. A quick break, and then we'll find out in a little while what Roe and Anna have on their show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.